The regular May 2010 meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors will come to order. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag and country.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record reflect that all five board members are present, so we do have a quorum. Council, is there a report from closed session?
Nothing to report from closed session, President Sanders.
Thank you. No report from closed session. That leads us to the first public comment period for items that are not on the agenda. I have one request to speak for the first public comment period from Harry Farmer.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for the opportunity to speak today. It's a lovely day.
You bet.
Thank God the wind has died down, huh?
Yeah.
yes, my name's Harry Farmer. I'm a 23-year resident of Cambria. I'd like to make some observations regarding comments made at the recent Coastal Commission hearing of May 13th, where the commission voted to approve the drilling project in front of Shamwell Park. I also wish to address the issue of the mine oppose any drilling at Santa Rosa State Beach and Shamwell Park without full environmental review, unquote. Almost all of our signature collecting was done in front of the Cambria Post Office or at the local farmers market. In this collective total of 15 hours, we obtained 370 signatures, 98% of them Cambria residents. I've given copies of these to your district clerk. At the Coastal Commission hearing, Mike Dill, a proponent of DeSal and a resident of Paso Robles, stated that if only roughly 400 people opposed the project, that it could be that 6,400 Cambrians favor the DeSal project. Let me restate. These signatures were collected over a very short period of time by very few people just prior to the Coastal Commission hearing, and after the CCSD board voted in late April to give responsibility for the project to the Army Corps of Engineers. In my own personal experience in collecting 120 signatures in a little over 6 hours, roughly a signature every 3 minutes, I encountered folks who ranged from passionately opposing DeSal to those who actually favored the project but signed the petition due to their concern that there is no environmental impact review being done before drilling takes place. Let me add that a little over half the people I approached were totally opposed or had deep concerns about the DeSal project and signed the petition, while the others either favored the project, said they needed more information, or just didn't care. I have no idea how many signatures we could have collected if we'd had more time to do so. Another speaker at the commission hearing stated that in the most recent CCSD election, that the one candidate who ran on an anti-DeSal platform came in, quote, dead last. I believe that candidate, Clive Finchamp, is here today. I further believe it is likely, more likely, that Clive got only 600-some votes because he chose, for whatever reason, not to publicly campaign and did not spend one penny on promoting his candidacy. Also, let me state, I believe that the folks that did not so much run on a pro-DeSal as a pro-DeSal candidate, but basically ran and were elected on a platform of fiscal responsibility. Daryl Robinson, the president of the United Lot Owners of Cambria Residents, when I state that the opposition to a desalination facility is due mainly to deep concern regarding both the impact this project would have on the environment as well as the resulting long-term costs that would be incurred by the community. At recent CCSD meetings, I've gotten up and spoke about the need for a public forum where experts on both sides of the DeSal issue could present information on this project and where members of the community as well as property owners who wish to build here could ask questions and voice their opinions. This would seem to be a logical approach to a project that will forever impact our community. Yet it is disappointing there has been basically no acknowledgement for a need for greater discussion of this issue by the district board. Regarding the perceived water shortage in Cambria, to see the desal project as the main answer to Cambria's water needs is what I believe to be really short-sighted. The fact that the district has made little or no effort to encourage the use of gray water systems and cisterns as a way to provide water for irrigating landscaping during the summer months has helped to create the so-called water problem that we have. Cambrians are very conscious and concerned individuals who in the past have made a real effort to conserve and use less water. We are, in fact, one of the most water-efficient communities in the state of California. I suggest that if as much effort had been made by the district and the board to promote these forward-looking alternatives as has been made to push desal, and if in the past the district had not allowed the excess amount of building in the 80s and 90s in a short-sighted way of generating more revenue, that we would not be dealing with this issue today, and that in fact there would never have been the building moratorium of the past decade. Finally, I am personally not opposed to more homes being built in Cambria. We have many talented people in the construction field here in our community who would be more than willing to utilize forward-looking green technologies that would be environmentally friendly. Cambria has the opportunity to be on the cutting edge as to how to approach our water issue and also allow for more home construction that would ultimately generate more jobs here in our town while also being more in harmony with Mother Nature as well. Perhaps a more open-minded approach by the district board that presents more information to both the residents of
have practiced the art of disagreeing without being disagreeable. And we live in a democracy. You have a right to your views, and you present them very well, very passionately, but with respect for your fellow man. And that's very much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Would any board member like to respond? I have a couple of thoughts that come to mind, but if anybody else wants to chime in, it's okay with me. Excuse me? I didn't mean to get into a dialogue. We're just going to have an opportunity to respond here. Let me say, first of all, that the concept of desalination didn't just spring up overnight. This board and previous boards, going back to the late 1990s, have followed a very deliberate path in terms of studying all of the alternatives available for supplemental water here in Cambria, and all of that is embodied in the Water Master Plan that was adopted about a year and a half ago, as I recall. And the facts in the Water Master Plan speak for themselves. All of the different alternatives were scored in terms of cost, not only capital cost, but ongoing operation, maintenance costs, et cetera. And like it or not, desalination comes out on top. That's number one. Number two, anybody that doesn't believe that there is an existing water shortage in Cambria, I invite them to call Peter Douglas, the executive director of the California Coastal Commission. I think he has a very good handle on the water supply problem here, and I think he will verify what we've known all along, and that is that there is an acute water shortage in this town. Number three, I appreciate the fact that there was a petition circulated. It's interesting that the petition does not state that those who sign are opposed to drilling on the beach. What it says is those who signed are opposed to drilling on the beach without further environmental review. It is not as if the test well project has not gone under some environmental review. In fact, it's gone under a great deal of environmental review. The California Coastal Commission is a certified regulatory agency, which means that it has the authority and the power to undertake all of the environmental review that's necessary and consistent with the California Environmental Quality Act. So just because the Corps of Engineers found the project to be exempt from the National Environmental Policy Act, and just because the CCSD board determined that because it's entirely a Corps project, the CCSD has no obligations under CEQA, it doesn't mean that there wasn't a thorough environmental review of the project. At the Coastal Commission hearing, for those who were paying attention, the executive director explained that, and he went on to say that he's perfectly satisfied with the process that has been followed. I'm paraphrasing, but in essence, he said, it makes no sense to do an environmental impact report on a test well project when you don't know whether or not the test well project will prove out. Once the test wells are in, and if they prove to be produce a sufficient amount of ocean water, then there will be a complete environmental impact report and an environmental impact statement, and all of the environmental issues will be dealt with in the context of that document. Coastal or board members? I've called you coastal commissioners there. I've had coastal commission on my mind.
No.
We are not the coastal commission. Any other comments?
Yeah, I'd just like for the record, there was a group, not CSD, which had a meeting on March the 16th at Rabobank, where there were four speakers who spoke for and against desalination, and that was not put on by CCSD. I think you and I were there as observers, and there was a thrashing out of a lot of details, and so I think it has received public discussion outside of this venue. Thank you.
Right. And there will be more public discussion of desalination. We have taken a small step. We'll see what the results of the investigations at Santa Rosa Creek Beach determine, and we'll know whether or not there's the possibility of a project. At that time, the board will have desal thoroughly vetted. Everybody will have an opportunity to speak, and the board will process all of the comments and so forth, and so there will be plenty of discussion going forward. Did you want to add something, Mr. Farmer?
I just wanted to add that while I'm not as necessarily knowledgeable or eloquent with regard to let's say the need for an environmental impact review before the drilling takes place, I do want to restate the fact that the majority of people that I and others spoke with regard to obtaining these signatures were signing this petition, yes, because of the need for environmental impact review, but mainly because they are passionately concerned about and opposed to desal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your comments. Okay, I have no more requests to speak for the first public comment period. Anybody else? Okay, Mr. Finchamp.
Just a brief comment. What you're saying in essence is you're gonna drill a hole in the ocean and then study it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Why?
Because you do an environmental impact report / environmental impact statement after you have a defined project. And the results of the geotechnical investigation will help us define that project.
What if you do some damage to the ocean? It's too late then, isn't it?
Well, the Coastal Commission is satisfied with the conditions of approval that have been applied to the coastal consistency determination for the Corps, and the Corps has agreed to those conditions of approval that that won't happen.
Where can we get a copy of the Coastal Commission's report?
I think it's on the Coastal Commission website.
Okay. One final point.
Sure.
There's been a lot said about existing lots, and I was a property appraiser for 12 years, and I can assure you, building a house on a lot where there's hundreds of houses currently available at the lowest price in recent years, why would you go ahead and build on a lot when you can buy an existing house and not go through any of the headaches of a permit process?
Well, I'm not in the market for a house, and I'm not interested in building one, so I can't answer that question.
Okay. I simply think you're putting the cart before the horse when you're going to go ahead and do something to the ocean that may have a hugely negative impact without first studying it.
Thank you. We had another gentleman who had his hand up in the back. Your name,
Roger Andriola.
Thank you.
First, I want to thank Mr. Farmright. I don't know, I've never heard him before, but basically everything he said rang a bell with me. So I want to thank Mr. Farmer. I think I'm familiar with the area where the test wells intend to be drilled. I don't know if the board members spend much time down there. It appears to me, from firsthand exposure and experience down there, that this is an area of a sensitive ecosystem. I've heard other people describe just drilling at the beach or putting a hole in the ocean. It doesn't appear that way to me. And after the public comment, I guess written comment, I remember I went down there to sort of make a mental note. I counted more than 40, I believe they're endangered brown pelicans, lined up along what I believe to be the San Rosa Creek estuary. It's not just a creek, it's an estuary. So we have endangered species, a substantial population, which is in rapid decline throughout California, as you read the press. And you have the estuary, which is, if you look into it, apparently the estuaries all along the Pacific Ocean coast are being systematically degraded and destroyed by well-intentioned public service projects, all up and down. And Santa Rosa Creek Estuary being one of the last estuaries that's not yet been damaged, I think, firstly, does require a full environmental review, I would think, as a person concerned. But more importantly than that, that's the government legal bureaucracy. It's a recognition, what it requires is a recognition of a very special, sensitive wildlife habitat where the fresh waters reach the salt waters and a variety of species on the surface and below are living. And I would make one last request to the board, the Cambria Community Services Board of Directors, that they perhaps go down there if they haven't and spend an afternoon and see. I was down there again this morning and I did not see the brown pelicans for this morning. I hope they're not in serious decline even here. And just appreciate a wildlife habitat that Cambria still has that should perhaps be protected by the government and not drilled. Thank you all very much.
Thank you for your comment. Mr. McKinnon.
Thank you for the opportunity. In rebuttal of what was just said, may I remind you that birds have wings and fish have fins. And if you spend a lot of time down there, you will see that the sand on the beach changes year or month after every storm. You have new sand, you have new rocks. It just changes all the time. The environment, like our world, is not static. It changes. And what we do in drilling a hole down in there and letting it fill full of water or whatever happens, that's just what happens. But we don't need to be concerned about the birds and the fish. They know how to take care of themselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McKinnon. Director D'Amico.
Yeah, I'd like to clarify maybe two or three points since we've made an extended discussion about this. First, I live three blocks from there. I had two of my grandchildren from New Jersey, their mother and father, and we played on the beach. We played in the playground, which, interestingly enough, is a county development on an adjacent to an estuary and adjacent to a beach where they have a pool that they built. There's actually toilets and a sewer that runs right along there. They were all constructed in this area of estuary safely, and apparently, since we still do have these wonderful birds and animals in the area, obviously we have not driven away the natural habitat that people or affected the natural habitat as badly as some people might think would happen. Secondly, while I appreciate and I agree, and I think I might have said the same thing, birds will fly away when they're scared, and they'll come back when they see no more activity. But one thing that is, while those birds, if there are endangered species that happen to alight there as they fly north or south, we have no information. I don't think it was ever brought up in any of the studies that that is a nesting area for the brown pelican or the like.
That's right.
So, and that is something that's a habitat that I would feel would be risky if we knew it was an actual nesting area. But as I understand it also, the Coastal Commission has said that although there's no indication of it, the drilling will not, proceed until August or September, I think.
September,
because they want to take the utmost caution just in case there is a set of birds that might want to nest there or habitat there during the summer season. And it also, obviously, then we would not be disturbing anybody who's using the beach. So I think those areas have been addressed and recognized as sensitive, but not sensitive enough to warrant the stopping of a exploration, if you will, to find out whether this project is viable, because the project depends on saltwater, seawater intake. And that's what we're trying to prove, that the availability of a system of withdrawal by means of wells would work. That, to me, and with some experience in this area, is less intrusive than other intakes, which are actually saltwater intakes, which run out into the ocean, where you have screened intakes, and that does, that's much more invasive to the overall ecosystem of that beach, of that estuary. So the Corps, as much as people try to discredit their capabilities, they have been doing beach control, beach erosion restoration. They have been doing major dredging and cleaning operations in harbors on the California coast for at least 50 or 60 years, and they have been regulated as much as everyone in the state has been by every known agency that seems to move. We'll have some discussions later about someone who's trying to build something that spent, I think he's 2.5 years to get permit from the Coastal Commission. So these people are not, these are not agencies that rubber stamp anybody. So I don't feel that by our recognition that the Corps has their project to move forward on, which we endorse, at least I endorse, that anyone's, quote, as somebody sent me an email, trying to a sleight of hand to get something done that should not be. So I think that we've done what we need to do. We've done as much due diligence as we should. We were cautionary as we proceeded. The Corps has taken the step, and the Coastal Commission has endorsed it. And the Coastal Commission has not always been this is not a group of people in the state. I wasn't on the board, but I agreed with some of the things that were said a few years ago with the Coastal Commission's issues with the tanks that we did and some of the other work that we've done. This is a tough agency, and we can agree that they probably should be. This is the last line of defense in maintaining the coast's ecosystem as well as its business environment and zoning environment. So I think we've done the right thing, and I hope that the people of the community overall will understand that we've taken the first step to allowing, or the last step to take the first step to see if this project will move forward technically. Thank you.
Thank you, Director D'Amico. I have an additional request to speak from Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Sanders.
You bet.
I walked in as you were talking about the Coastal Commission's determination, and one of the things that the Coastal Commission also has said both at the appeal of the Pine Knolls tanks and during some of the other appeals that they've seen, and said it again on the desal testing, was that the CCSD should undertake an in-stream study for each of the streams, and I didn't know if there was plans ahead to do that.
That is a requirement that I believe is in, first of all, it's in the Cambria and San Simeon community plan that was adopted by the Coastal Commission. So it's a requirement that's imposed on us. And that will be done in connection with the ultimate project if we get that far, if the geotechnical investigation pans out. The issue did come up during the Coastal Commission deliberations on the Corps' coastal consistency determination, and a condition of approval was applied, which the Corps agreed to, that the if there is any water flowing on the surface of Santa Rosa Creek, it has to be monitored, and the test wells are not to interfere with those flows. So it's first and foremost on everybody's mind.
Just two other quick points. There is limited water in Cambria, but I think that the shortage is actually a function more of the policy of allocating 18 units bimonthly per connection, and the Coastal Commission's restrictions on how much we can withdraw from each of those streams, which is less than the Water Board had allowed in that permit. I miss in the agenda packet having the well production charts. We are getting the stream level graphs, and I appreciate those, but I do miss having the well production charts because it allows me to see how much water we're actually producing, not necessarily consuming, because some of it gets lost through leaks and stuff, not as much as used to be, but... And my final question was, I didn't see on the agenda anything about the the Fiscalini Ranch eucalyptus removal project, so I didn't know if that had been removed from action.
Staff is still working on it.
Thank you. That's all I need to know. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Let me comment on the issue of water shortage. By any yardstick, Cambria is in an overbuilt condition. You can point fingers, you can assess blame, but it is a fact that we live with. And we have two problems that flow from being in an overbuilt condition. Number one, we still don't have adequate storage capacity, which relates directly to the ability of the district fire department to fight fires. We've corrected a significant part of the problem by building the Pine Knolls water tank project, but we have a ways to go, and we'll hear about some of that today. We have an item on the agenda that relates to that issue. The second part of the equation is the water supply problem. If we're blessed with a significant amount of rain, particularly rain in the into May, for example, we were fortunate to have a rain the other day, then the chances are pretty good that we can get through the summer and to the next rainy season without having too significant a problem. But we went through an extended drought period just recently, and there were times when the well levels were dangerously low. Any way you slice it, any way you dice it, we can't run and we can't hide from the fact that we have a significant water shortage problem, and we have to address it with a supplemental water supply some way, somehow. We've gone through a very significant and, I might add, expensive process of evaluating all of the alternatives for a supplemental water supply, and over the course of many years and a whole lot of deliberations, it all points to one solution as being the most cost-effective and, quite frankly, the most environmentally sensitive for this community, and that happens to be desalination. The CCSD has taken steps to make sure that growth does not run rampant if we have a desalination plant. There is a growth control measure that is in effect. In fact, there are two of them. One is Measure P, which makes it extremely difficult, if not impossible, to extend service beyond the boundaries of the existing boundaries of the services district. I'm very familiar with that because I drafted it, along with Art Montandon, former counsel. And the second growth control measure is the lot retirement program. And we have had reports on a pretty consistent basis about how successful one significant aspect of the lot retirement program has been. We've been able to retire how many lots, Madam General Manager? It's close to 400, I think.
It is, to date, yeah.
Yeah, it's very close to 400 lots. We have a ways to go, but all of the signposts are very positive in terms of getting a sufficient number of lots retired so that we don't have to worry about unbridled growth once we solve the supplemental water supply problem. Director D'Amico.
I believe since this is our only venue that we can discuss things in the public as a group, and it also gives an opportunity for the community to speak, but we are held to a level of responsibility, and I think I share that with my board members, to be accurate in what we say is our best representation. Just want to bring something up, because this is a constant issue I see with trying to work in these areas and many areas. The gentleman brought up, which is a wonderful bird, the brown pelican. But the facts belie the issue that might worry a lot of community people. 1970, the brown pelican was listed as an endangered species. Its population was down to 10,000. That was a period of time when the DDT issue was coming to a head. The DDT was stopped, and we can all feel wonderful at this point. The present estimated population is 650,000 brown pelicans. So from 10,000, they've grown up to 650,000. And they're no longer an endangered species. They were removed from the list November 2009. While it's important that we take care of the animal and the foreign fauna, I think it's important, too, is that when there is a success, we have to stop using something that was not an issue of development or growth. Might have been developed if you talk about the use of a chemical for foodstuffs, but the reality was it was not a bird that was endangered because Rancho Palos Verdes was built and somebody scared him away. And I don't. So that's an issue, and I get some quizzical looks there. But that's why I think the point is I want to make sure that the public knows that the brown pelican, while they are here, they're here in substantial numbers, 650,000. That's a U.S. count. And since they migrate along both coasts, we have half of them or more. They probably like California, so there's more here. Thank you.
Thank you, Director D'Amico. Director McKinnon.
I think this conversation is like deja vu, but it's still, I think, important and it's necessary. I think we have found over the last 150 years that the community of Cambria recognizes there's a supplemental water need from the point, as Peter has brought up, driving cattle over the cliff rather than seeing die of thirst. We're also seeing across this world, not only is water projects a good investment, that is dollars-wise, but Spain, Middle East, the Caribbean, Florida, San Diego, on and on and on. More and more, desal has been deemed by others as the choice, the best choice of creating a supplemental water supply. In 1995, we had spent hundreds of thousands of dollars with experts of all kinds to deem again desal is the proper way, and I might say, based on what the chairman said, the most environmentally sensitive solution to our supplemental water supply. It's also recognized that what we're doing at that beach, as Director D'Amico has said in a previous meeting, we have very few choices. There's rocks on and boulders on either side of where we're planning to drill. This is a temporary situation, and just as Morro Bay has done dredging and defiled their beaches by not only mud and whatever else, but also I saw in one of the later tribunes all sorts of hoses all over the beach. Incredible. I think we've been very sensitive to the public requests. I think what we're going to find, hopefully, is a viable source of seawater. And we will conduct an EIR that will be very complete, as it should be. And I again say this is deja vu. This board has been saying the same thing for many, many months. And I think it is a good thing. But we are repeating ourselves. Thank you.
One final thought. As we move along here in the very near future, we will begin to have some public discussion about how all of this gets financed. And there is a hope internally within the district that if the geotechnical tests pan out and the Corps of Engineers and the district go forward working on a desalination plant solution to our water supply problem, that the impact financially on the ratepayers will be absolutely minimal. That the resources are there, it's just a matter of pulling them all together into a package that makes sense so that everybody can understand how we're going to pay for this. And it's a critical element of a decision to go forward, and we're very confident, again, that the study that we're going to do will show that the impact on the ratepayer will be absolutely minimal. So stay tuned, and please be prepared to engage in the discussions on financing as we go forward. I have no more requests to speak on this item, so we will move to item number 3, agenda review. Are there any additions, deletions, or consent calendar items to be pulled? Hearing none, the agenda stands as published. There are no acknowledgments or presentations, so we will move to item number 5, special reports. I see Commander Hall is here. Commander, welcome. He's in his full regalia today.
Well, not completely. Hi, I'm Commander Ben Hall. I'm responsible for the Sheriff's Coastal Patrol Division. Sheriff's Coastal Patrol provides the Sheriff's Patrol for about 36,000 people in the unincorporated area here from Avila up to Monterey County line. For Cambria itself, last year we had 223 calls for service and 31 reports. Past year, past month, same period of time, we handled only 156 calls for service and took 26 reports. Actually, it's been a pretty good 30 days. I looked at last month or last year, same period of time, we had about 5 burglary reports and 2 felony thefts. And this particular period of time, we had no burglary reports and no felony thefts. We had a couple traffic, a couple drunks, one drug case. Our narcotics task force did some work up on Santa Rosa Creek Road on a cultivation site, it looked like. Handled one domestic case where an arrest was made. And an elder abuse report that was unfounded. And one credit card, someone was checking the credit card statement, and there was a false entry on there from out of the county. So very good month. Any questions?
Any questions of Commander Hall? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for doing a good job.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah, good luck next week.
Yeah, good luck.
Okay, great. That leads us to item number 6, the managers and board reports. Madam General Manager.
Okay, thank you. Attached to my report is the federal advocacy report for April from Vanskoyuk Associates. Also attached is the Army Corps quarterly report, and this is for activity through March 2010. Further attached is the voluntary lot merger program to which we alluded, and I can confirm that there have been 449 lots merged to date. If you look at this month's report, we had to reduce some information for prior years or since the program began because it started making the report look a little ineffective and real cluttery. But the great news is, as a result of the board's action and approval of increasing the fees, that 97 lots have been reduced in the past 3 months, and that's more than the totals for the past 3 years of the program. It's a lot of work, and it has consumed a lot of Corey's time, but we are going to probably move forward with another mailing just to remind folks again that it's there, and just in case they feel like it might not be something that we're paying for, they're just reminded that we are. If you look at the report, the other good news is for the total of 449 lots, it's cost the district $26,000. And on the report itself, it shows that right now, because of the these fees that were collected and used for this program are solely identified for this program. They are not user fees. They are not property taxes. And the balance that we have remaining is roughly $48,000. So we still have some to work with. There's about 100. There's right at 143 lots left to meet the second goal that the Citizens Committee did. And after that, it's kind of like, you know, up in the air. You know, we're just going to continue to move
it's
forward
all gravy.
With the program. Yeah. It's already moved past two goals. I was asked about to report that the directors Chaldecott and McKinnon had met with the Rabobank representatives along with our finance manager, Al Labossiere. I wasn't able to attend. I had a prior another meeting. And it was about external investments or maybe further diversification of our reserve funds. The investment policy provides for it, gives the general manager some authority for them. And I just want you to know I'll be bringing something back after we have an opportunity to concentrate on that. The budget and some staffing issues have consumed a lot of my time here of late. There's also in the thought process for next year of looking at our water and sewer connection and impact fees. They haven't been looked at since the Black and Veatch long-term financial management plan, so we've got that listed as a project in our plates and in our list to do.
Excuse
and this
me.
Would be increasing the water and sewer.
Director Chaldecott, question.
Could you define the difference between the impact fee and the connect fee?
Just? You know, it's going to depend on what we and how we approach it. There could be that for a water and sewer connection fee, everybody knows that. It's just a hookup to the house. So what that, but it could be that there could be other impacts associated with other developments. It could be park. It could be we look at industrial fees. You know, we don't have that in place now. We might be looking at some pretreatment. We don't currently have any of those things in place for wastewater. So there could be some different type fees and that impact the system that aren't related to connections.
Is that like a restaurant having to treat the grease and so on?
That's exactly
yeah.
right.
Okay.
I mentioned just for the communities and the board's information, the fall cleanup for Mission Country is scheduled for September 27th through October 1st. So it's a reminder that this is the time where we can put out extra trash and recycling and yard waste, and it gets picked up for free on our trash day. And if there's any larger items, even that can be coordinated with Mission Country, and there's a nominal fee for those to be picked up as well. The Parks and Rec Commission, or the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Commission met on Tuesday, May 4th, and their next meeting's next Tuesday, June 1st. And we move along to the finance manager's report. There was one disbursement in excess of $100,000 during last month, and that was the bank loan payment in the amount of $254,251 paid to Citizens Bank. I was asked by one of the directors when I met individually about the budget, just to review that, about our debt service schedule. So I took the liberty, I shouldn't take the credit, it was Al Labossiere, of course, to ask him to provide a condensed version because the one he prepares for the auditor is much more detailed. And I've given you a copy of that, but I tried to get the most information that allows the directors, you as a board, to see what our debt service schedule looks like, and then we will include this in the finance manager's report each month so you can kind of keep up with it. What we show are 5 different financings. There's one for the Pierce, the fire truck, the pumper truck through Oshkosh Capital for the fire department. There's two bank notes, one for the portion that, or there's a bank note, one that relates to water, one that relates for sewer that was refunded in 2006. And then there's a series 1990B bonds for the wastewater treatment plant with Union Bank. And I believe that's, okay, and then the next one is a state revolving fund loan. It shows the original principal. It shows when the final payment dues are date. You see the maturity dates. Al put on here the average annual payments, just so that's something that we have as information, and then what the projected balance is, which of course will change each year, but you can see that totals to about $4 million when it's all said and done. And the first one matures or is paid, and it looks like May 1st, 2015, that bank note with Citizens Bank, the one that's getting paid this month. And then the next one that gets paid off is the fire truck in May 19th of 2016. And then the state revolving fund loan gets paid off May 28th, 2016. And then the last is a series 1999B bonds with Union Bank, and that's October 1st of 2024. So I hope that information is useful and it responds to questions that have been asked by me and staff about the bonds and the debt service schedule. Al makes a mention of the local agency investment fund, or the LAIF fund, as of April 30th. The balance is $4,631,918. He mentions the increase of $256,000 from March 31st, 2010, and then it's up $260,000 or $261,000 from last year this time. Okay, moving on to the fire chief's report. Mark reports that the fire department participated in the Slo County Wildland Interface Drill. It was held this year in South County at Park Hill. Our fire personnel hosted the instruction on the compressed air foam systems. He also mentions a recent surfing competition where an Incorps member, David Udevin, was able to, since he was at the event, swim out and assist a victim that was in distress, so it ended up good for the kayaker. May 9th, the fire crews responded to a roof fire at the Main Street Grill. It was in the exhaust system over the interior barbecue grill, and the staff at fire, along with the management at Main Street Grill and the health department and a fire protection company, are working to increase the level of duct cleaning and inspection so that we can eliminate the problem. This was the second event there at that location. And Mark reminds us about the weed abatement program and the fact that the June 15th deadline is already passed, or is coming upon us in the next couple of weeks, and the fire department inspections are beginning on June 16th, and the CCSD's weed abatement contractor will begin work on June 20th. And his statistics are there. And I was going to turn it over to Bob Gressens, but before I do, for the district engineer's report, I just wanted to respond to that. Amanda Rice mentioned the water production charts. Those are posted on the web, and they're available. So they're there. You know, we're trying to do the best we can to get the information out as soon as possible. We just don't always have them in time for the production of these agendas, or we just, once we put them out there, we know the public has the opportunity to have the information. And then I just wanted to add my two cents of the fact about the geotech. Sarawan, Coastal Commissioner Sarawan, is a fierce advocate and a member of the National Audubon Society. She certainly mentioned it to us the last go-around for geotech, and she was the one that seconded our motion. So I'm certain that if she had any issues with regard to the birds, she would have brought them up, because she certainly wasn't bashful about them the first go-around when it was a snowy plover at the San Simeon site. So I'll turn it over to Bob, and if there's any questions, feel free.
Thank you, Tammy. I'll be very brief because I think most of the discussion centered on desalination already, so I'll just skip that unless you have a specific question you'd like to ask me. I'd be glad to respond to that. We also have a discussion item on the Stewart Street tank later on, so I won't get into that project as well. The main update that I have from the last more detailed report is that the county has written to us advising us that the Pembroke Street repair will probably be delayed. They're dealing with some property rights issues, so that's gonna be delayed some. I think the last time we optimistically thought it would be worked on about this time in the mid-May, so they did advise us that project's slowing down some while they work out the property rights issues. And then as far as the well levels, you can see from the charts, they're essentially full, both the San Simeon and the Santa Rosa aquifer. So that pretty much concludes my report, unless you'd like me to get into something specifically. I'd be glad to.
Any questions of the district engineer? Okay. Thank you, Bob. Questions of the general manager, please.
Yeah. Well, general manager, maybe, I don't know if I can discuss, but by the way, thank you very much for this chart that Alan put together. It was on my, I had my little red flag there because I wanted to see it. Because the finance manager's report has become a beautiful, at least a wonderful document to look at. It gives us a great look at where we are. The only thing that was open, it looked nice to have $4.5 million in the bank. But when you realize we have $3,921,610 of loans, it puts it in a better perspective. I'm not Greek. And that's what I'd like to ask, since the finance committee
or Irish or Spanish or
yeah,
whatever.
Spanish or well, British even yeah.
The whole continent.
I did not say that with my wife around, but
right.
One of the issues that I think needs to be looked at is our quote fiduciary responsibility. When you look at how the money is presently invested, I won't commit anybody to a number, but I can't imagine we're getting more than 1%.
In fact, in the next year's budget, we're only estimating a 0.75,
okay.
0.75%.
So what I suggest or I ask is that diversifying is important because I don't know leaving all that money in a coffer within the limits of Sacramento scares me to hell.
Yes, me too.
Yeah. So that's one issue. The second issue, though, is that if you could, or someone could report to the Finance Committee, on each of the five loans, what is the interest rate we're paying? And more importantly, I think, is, because I know it's going to be more than 1%, is there any prepayment penalty on closing them out if we wanted to? Because to get money at 1% or less, I mean, I just put a rolled a CD on a 90-day, and I got the 0.31, so it's meaningless. And to be paying 4 or 5 or 6%, I don't know what we are for the pumper when we have $50,000. I think you have to look at that. I know we need a cushion. The question becomes, is $4.3 million in the bank, yet you're losing that $4.3 million because we're paying well over almost $400,000 a year on an interest that's much higher.
Right.
So I think there's got to be some, at least a study and a discussion about it. So that we don't really, because I think we can see that with the world economies being what they are, interest rates on money in a bank are not going up. And the risk of having debt is higher and higher. So I think we have to have some understanding of what our responsibility is with what we have against what we want to do. And I do realize we have capital projects coming up and the like. But that is the responsibility of the utility. I'm looking at the responsibility of the CCSD, which you...
Very good points.
Okay. So,
all.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And that will be undertaken. Any other board member questions of the general manager?
Yeah.
Director McKenna.
Just clarification with Van Skoyak. Correct me if I'm wrong. From looking at our $3 million in-kind credit, it seems going through this process, even if we assume it's going to be completely positive, it's going to be 5 months away before they go through all the checks.
The goal is to have this completed by August, and it is back in the L.A. district office.
Yeah, already.
So this is a priority on Bob and the project teams.
Keeps going back and forth.
This is it, though. Once it's responded, it's back for signature. It's signed here and then sent back to them.
So, okay. So it's less than what I could see in his report.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
At that time,
it is.
Yeah.
It is thanks to what he did in D.C.
He's been performing.
Yeah.
He really has. The other one was, very quickly, are we still dealing with Burge? Yeah, I see legal.
I hope not, but
he keeps showing up.
When he
all
sends
the time,
a letter to the and right now we've had communications, the district council team and I. It's like he keeps bringing up the same issues over and over, the ones that have been argued in court, and we just need to stop responding back.
How do you do that? Yeah, don't answer him.
Right.
I keep seeing him.
He's already been deemed a vexatious litigator.
Exactly.
There's a restraining order against him.
There he is.
Exactly.
Good. for a bad penny, exactly. Right. Thank you.
Thank you. I have two requests to speak from members of the audience on the general manager's report. The first is from Elizabeth Bentenhausen.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I'm Elizabeth Bentenhausen, a resident of Cambria for 8 years and some months. You may recall that last meeting I asked a question and then received no answers to the two questions, I mean, and therefore emailed you, and fortunately General Manager Rudock responded. I'd like simply to repeat these two questions and then follow up with the response and another question. I repeat two questions I asked yesterday, May 26th. I received no answer. Agreement between the Army Corps of Engineers and CCSD that the proposed geological and hydrogeological testing is excluded from this agreement addressing the design and construction of the proposed desalination plant. What effect does your adopted resolution of March 26th have on the CCSD's responsibility for acquiring permits? And I quoted there what is called the project agreement between you and the Army Corps of Engineers. And I want to read you that. If I flip this paper correctly, you know it certainly well, but I hope that the members of the TV audience read this regularly. The title of the agreement you signed is the Project Cooperation Agreement, as you know. Now, I received a response, fortunately, from General Manager Rudock. I thank her because nobody else responded. But she said in her response, she quoted again the documents that I had cited, and then she said, this means that this is a pre-project investigation not directly related to the design and construction of the project, okay? So you hear something repetitive from Elizabeth Bettenhausen, my apologies, Mr. McKinnon, on deja vu. But I have asked again and again and again what a project is, this project. And I'm going to bring it up in another way today because I don't quite agree with General Manager Rudock's interpretation of the text. But I raise it again because, hallelujah, thank you, gods of the universe, the quarterly report is here from the Army Corps of Engineers, which I mentioned last time. If you look at the quarterly report from the Army Corps of Engineers in the General Manager's report, you will discover that the word project appears again and again and again, including on CCSD activities no longer or maybe never directly connected with the geotech drilling. $166,000, that was raised last time. It still sits here as a contribution from us, not refunded by the Army Corps yet, apparently. I ask only as a ratepayer and a citizen of the town, I want to keep track of the bucks. I want to know when I pay for my piddly little amount, because as you know, I come from a family of recyclers and conservationists. The first two efficient things, President Sanders, in your study of the Water Master Plan, desal was third. Not first. Recycling and conservation. And I can go with evaporation to argue that it's a water supply issue, if you'd like me to some other day. But I want to know, what does the Army Corps of Engineers, who simply overrode the CCC with federal law, there was no environmental debate there whatsoever. It was a question of reading the federal law and how the Army Corps of Engineers construes its responsibilities. And the CCC had not, the Coastal Commission had no response because there was none legally. Now, I want to know, the next time the Army Corps of Engineers comes to you and asks for $3.62 for the project, will you pay? And what do you mean by project? Does this thing down here, if it turns up, a pile and a half of pollution by this drilling down there, who is culpable fiscally? The CCSD or the Army Corps of Engineers? I hear you now saying, thank you for giving me slightly more than 3 minutes. I hear you now saying that you five gentlemen have no legal responsibility for the geotech drilling down there, period, because it's an Army Corps of Engineers project.
I ask you to look again at the documents you have signed and give us, the public, a written out explanation of how you think you are legally exempted from the requirements of that project agreement when it comes to the preparation, execution, and follow-up of the geotech investigation down at Santa Rosa Creek Estuary. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. The only response that I can give right now is that I think your characterization of the Coastal Commission's interaction with the Corps of Engineers on the Corps' application for a coastal consistency determination is just wrong. The Coastal Commission applied three conditions of approval, all related to environmental considerations on the Corps. The Corps accepted those conditions of approval. So it's not as if the Corps of Engineers rolled into the Coastal Commission and rolled right over them. Quite the contrary. Yes, Director McKinn, or excuse me, Director D'Amico.
Your questioning or your observation is wrong in that, at least for myself, I did not say we have no responsibility for the work that they're going to perform. What the intent is and what happened was we have no obligation to perform any function in order to get that geotechnical. They are the project manager. They are the project manager for the CCSD. That's the agreement. They are going to perform all the necessary responsibilities for engineering, design, and construction. That exploration, while it's a task, if you want a different word, it's a task within an overall project, that task needed no input from us. And that's a basis, from what I understand, is that they're, legally, they have the responsibility and the capability to get the permits, to get the permission from the Coastal Commission, and we had no obligation to do anything. So,
right.
So that's my understanding of what I voted on, what I agreed to allow to happen, because I saw no obligation on the board's part to do anything in a positive manner or an action manner to get the exploration done. That's what they're hired for. Elizabeth, Ms. Bettenhausen has pointed out, if you look at it, you do see federal labor being paid for. That's what they're getting paid to do. They are getting paid to perform functions. At some point in time, they'll engage the geotechnical. It's $733,000. And later on, they'll engage engineers to do design. That doesn't mean that we have to do anything positive and actionable to work with the designer if we allow the project manager to do what they've been engaged to do.
Right.
We did it with the Pine Knolls tanks. You do it with any project. The person who's engaged to do the work, to do the engineering, to do the oversight, and in this case, all the way through construction management, we're wedded to the Corps to get this project done. That's their job, and they should be doing it. Now, it's great to go after them and make sure they do their job, but it doesn't mean we then take on any responsibility to do something they may not be doing at the right time. So I see no problem. I mean, it's a personal observation, and that's why I did move the way I did at the last two meetings ago, I guess it was. Thank you.
Thank you, Director D'Amico. I have one additional request to speak under this item. It's from Jerry McKinnon.
Jerry McKinnon again. I'd like to thank you for the coffee. Very good. And I thank you for the television. The television educates me so much. When I see it a second time, I learn so many things that went right over my head sitting out here. Now, my concern, however, is in the lot merger program. I believe you said there are in the neighborhood of 400 lots that have been merged at the present time?
Correct.
Educate me, please. Does that mean that every lot that becomes a part of Cambria, they are turned over to Cambria, are they? They
no,
are not.
No, they are not.
Oh, okay. There are a certain number of lots that are turned over to Cambria for one reason. At the sheets that are in the agenda, I see that we have lost about 4% of our income on property taxes from the year 08, and that's probably when the program began.
What's your question,
well,
Jerry?
Well, my question is, are we programming ourselves to recognize that we are getting poorer and poorer and poorer every year by the loss of revenue from the property taxes?
I think that by and large, the lots that have been turned over to the district had marginal value to begin with. And so the amount of property taxes that would have kicked to the Cambria Community Services District was de minimis.
When I look at the sheet that funds departments, all funds in 08, there were $1,953,000 paid in property taxes to the CCSD, and 10 and 11 were expecting $1,872,000, which is a loss of $80,000.
Two intervening considerations. Number one, there has been a decline, thanks to the economy, in assessed value countywide. And number two, the state has come in and taken some of the property tax money that would otherwise come to the Cambria Community Services District. So you've got to take those intervening facts into consideration.
Are we taking those intervening facts into consideration when we develop a program for our community?
Yes.
It seems to me
absolutely
that hey, here I am again. The Vets Hall needs some help. And there's not really much money going, at least I don't see a budget for the Vets Hall. So thank you very much.
Understood.
Sorry that we keep losing money. Thank you.
That's okay. Thank you. Board members, any other questions of the general manager? I have no further request to speak from members of the audience on the general manager's report. Okay, with that, are there any board member or board committee reports? Hearing none, we'll move on to the consent calendar. Before we have a motion to approve the consent calendar, I'll ask the general manager to read the consent calendar items.
And if I may, I was just going to make one clarifying comment on page 108 of the position description for the utilities manager.
Sure.
Director Chaldecott and I didn't get a chance to talk until this morning, but he mentioned when you toggle between the two in San Luis Obispo County. 7E, consider approving extension of intent to serve letter for Cambria Shores N, Kim Eady, applicant APN 022.381.002. 7F, consider approving extension of intent to serve letter for a senior care facility, Michael Clark, applicant, APN 024.191.052. 7G, consider adoption of resolution 24-2010, ratifying the side letter number 2 to the amended payment and compensation plan, management and confidential employees. 7H, consider adoption of resolution 23-2010, reinstating CCSD employee health reimbursement arrangement benefit and approving services agreement with Business Plans, Inc. 7I, consider adoption of resolution 25-2010, requesting CCSD 2010 biennial election be consolidated with San Luis Obispo County for the November 2nd, 2010 consolidated general election. 7J, cast a ballot for Director Merle Clift as the LAFCO alternate special district member. And 7K, consider adoption of resolution 27-2010, revising the utilities department reorganization for succession planning.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
I move we accept the manager's report as presented and written, as spoken.
Approve the consent calendar, you mean, Director McKinnon?
The consent calendar, yes, yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Thank you. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second that motion.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent calendar. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That takes us to item 8, hearings and appeals. Item 8A is a public hearing to confirm itemized report of water and wastewater standby or availability charges as provided in Government Code Section 61124. Madam General Manager.
Thank you. This is the final step, and we have the itemized report for the water and wastewater standby or availability charges. You see the fiscal impact is still the same as we've reported in prior months, $170,000 for water estimated revenue, $110,000 estimated revenue for wastewater. You've previously adopted the resolution 162010 that established the standby availability annual charges at $45 for water and $30 for wastewater, and this is also established legislatively, obviously. And then the itemized report for the water and wastewater standby or availability charges by parcel has been available for review. It is here today at the hearing.
Thank you, Madam General Manager.
Oh, excuse me, one last correction. I apologize. Al Labasio reminded me on page 116 of the financial report, the numbers or the balance, it just changes the location in the financial report.
Great.
And that's all.
Thank you, Madam General Manager. Any questions of the General Manager before we open the public hearing? Hearing none, the public hearing on item 8A is now open. I have no request to speak. Anybody in the audience wish to speak to this item? Seeing no one, the public hearing is closed. Board members, is there a motion to adopt Resolution 20-2010?
I would move we adopt Resolution 20-2010, a resolution confirming itemized report of water and wastewater standby or availability charges.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 20-2010 as read. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. That takes us to item 9, regular business. Item 9A is consideration of introduction of Ordinance 01-2010, adding provisions to the CCSD Municipal Code, establishing the board's policy that employees pay 100% of the employee's designated share of the Public Employee Retirement System retirement contribution. Madam General Manager?
It's a mouthful when you read it. Okay, so this is the ordinance we committed to bringing back as a result of the negotiations that the CCSD had between the IFF, the International Association of Firefighters, the Local 4635. And then now, as of today, since the board has approved the consent agenda, the contract concessions that were made by the management and confidential exempt employees. So this ordinance, essentially what it does is with all new hires, it reduces the CCSD's obligation to pay the designated employee portion of the PERS retirement. Right now, that employee portion is 8% for miscellaneous. It's 9% for the public safety employees. Historically, we've been paying the entire portion, the employer and the employee portion. Again, as since the negotiations are concluded, the IFF agreed to that all new hires would pay 100%. And with today's side letter that was ratified by you, the management confidential employee said all new hires pay 100%. So we also agree that there would be a provision added to the CCSD Municipal Code, providing that it's the policy of this board that all MOUs currently in effect that provide for this benefit to expire, it shall no longer be provided by the CCSD. And the ordinance, the code provision, will make it clear that this benefit is not considered to be negotiable, and it's to be eliminated as soon as practiced. There are some requests for extending that contract, and I'm not here, or, you know, before negotiations conclude. So I will make sure that that note is placed in the file.
Thank you. Any questions of the General Manager or the District Counsel? Director Chaldicott.
Yeah, the very last line on page 120 there, it says this proposed municipal code provision will make it clear that the benefit is not considered to be negotiable and is to be eliminated as soon as practical. I'm trying to work out what that really means, because you're actually taking the benefit away with this. Is that correct?
It just means that in future labor negotiations, it won't be a negotiable item. It'll be in the code as law, CCSD law, and it won't be a negotiable item for future negotiations.
Okay. Yeah.
Any other questions? Yes, Director D'Amico.
Yes, and I don't know if this is the venue or it has to be added to a meeting agenda further. Maybe the council can ask. What we've done here, finally, which is great, and I appreciate the SEIU and the firefighters, or the, at least the firefighters and our administrative staff agreeing to it, what we've gotten to is really what PERS is. We've retrenched back from the, let's call it the wonderful times of the 90s. One of the things I'm concerned about, and I think I know at least 13 states are worried about it, is that the whole issue of pension and welfare. Now, as my understanding is that we negotiate salaries, but the pension portion of our contracts are following PERS. And I would suggest that we, as a PERS, and it goes to what is our responsibility here. We can't leave the overall negotiation completely out of our hands. It is, but I think we need to do some positive impact to it. And the question becomes is, do we take a position on the entire pension issue and make it known to the pension organizations that we use as part of our contract negotiations, such that, and you know, I think everybody's getting more interested in what Europe is happening and what's happening here. Many of the provisions for retirement, well, it's 1.5% per year, 2.5% per year, the highest last year. While everyone would love to retire at 100%, I don't know many people who have at a private industry. And private industry, we're all taxpayers, including public employees. I guess where I'm going is shouldn't that also be our responsibility, not to only, as actually General Manager's done a great job in these negotiations, but what we negotiate is work rules and hourly wage. There has to be some action by this board to address the issue of the biggest issue in the closet, as they say. Because if you look, when we get into, or we actually pass the budget. Is the budget coming up? I guess
budget's coming up.
When the budget comes up, you look at pay and benefits are still rising each year. While we've done a great job in controlling our payroll costs, the benefit costs are still enormously increasing. And the reason they're increasing is because the PERS package is enormous. So I'm just suggesting that this sounds good. It's a great first step, but really all we've done is back up to what is standard. And I think this as one element of the governing board, we should be looking and saying it's gotten too far and we have to take a position. But like I said, I don't know if that's a special thing that we have to put on an agenda and have a discussion, have a study by the Finance Committee and come up with some alternatives. Thank you.
It's an excellent point. And one of the things that in this draft budget, one of the notes is the retirement benefit costs. And it would be, I think, I know the staff is very busy, but the extrapolation, because we have some rather older employees that are getting ready for retirement as we speak. And Mr. McKinnon said, our revenues are decreasing. Our expenses are increasing every year. And we have done some things to minimize that impact, but the general trend is just what I said. So as Director D'Amico mentioned, this is an overwhelming bubble, and we must address it. And one of the things is to look at projection of what we might be experiencing in retirees' benefits as one benchmark that we consider. Again,
we retirements at certain ages, but is that something we've picked? Could we have had several other options? I know the healthcare district here recently went to from age 50 to age 55. Is that right, Christy? Yeah, on their retirement. So there obviously is some built-in options in the PERS program. And maybe we first of all better look at the program that we have. I quietly agree with you that we may at some point have to say, let's go to a money purchase plan or some kind of 401k rather than a defined benefit plan of a PERS, which is which puts all the responsibility on the public agency. But first step, I would think, would be it would be important for us to really know what options we have within our current plan. Are we giving 100% of the best deal, or is there a difference things in between? And if we had those to start with, that might be a starting point.
Absolutely.
For us.
Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion. I think having a good discussion with all of the available information about how PERS works, what our obligations are, whether there are alternatives, out in the open so that we can make intelligent choices is a good idea. I suspect that there will be an initiative or two on the ballot in California in November that will try and address the pension costs that the state is facing and perhaps local governments as well, and attempt to bend the curve as much as possible so that we don't get to a point where we're like Ireland and Greece and so forth. What I sense is there's a consensus, and I'm sure Director Chaldicott wouldn't mind if we have this item on the agenda. We have a full-blown discussion of what our obligations are, what our costs are, what our options are, and Director D'Amico, if it meets with your approval, then we can start to make some decisions from that point. Is that satisfactory?
That'd be wonderful.
Okay.
Like I said, I think we owe ourselves and the public a discussion so that they understand
right.
what has been done, what can be done, and if we did take action, they'd be able to voice their opinions, and which is the purpose of having these public meetings.
Absolutely.
2012.
2 years.
A few months right before the SEIU.
Yeah, so
right.
it's not it's around the corner, but it's going to take months to go through this. This is not an, it's not an easy thing, and I do not want to cavalierly make a decision on something, so I think we need to have information. We have to have time to read it and discuss it and get input from the community. Once they understand, as evidenced by our own statements here, for $2.5 million in salary and wages, which ends up directly in the workers' hands, which is great, payroll taxes and benefits are $1.6 million.
Right,
it's enormous.
Yeah,
it's
a huge part of the budget.
Yeah, and one
the biggest.
So far we've exerted no control other than the great movements we've had on regaining their proportionate share. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions on item 9A? Any other discussion? Is there a motion to approve ordinance 01, or excuse me, to
this is,
it's to introduce ordinance 01-2010?
I would like to introduce ordinance 01-2010.
There a second?
President,
moved and seconded to introduce Ordinance 01-2010, which adds provisions to the CCSD Municipal Code establishing the board's policy that employees pay 100% of the employee's designated share of the public employee retirement system retirement contribution. All those in favor say aye.
President
aye.
Sanders,
aye.
Can I quickly
yes.
interrupt? I'm terribly sorry.
Yep.
There's that laborious two-step process involved in all ordinances.
It has to be set for it, subsequent consideration.
No, there's a motion that's required to
okay.
waive full reading.
Yes.
And then a second motion that includes the title specifically. I apologize for interrupting.
No problem.
I should have reminded you before
you
started.
You are correct. Would the maker of the motion be willing to amend the motion to waive reading of the ordinance?
I do.
Is that satisfactory, counsel?
That's satisfactory.
And it's satisfactory to the second.
Yes.
I will interject one little historical anecdote here. The reason that there's a requirement that ordinances be read relates back to England long before the United States became a country, when a large portion of the population was illiterate, and so people would gather in the town square, and for those who weren't able to read, the ordinance would be read to them so that they could understand it and make comment on it before it went to the local municipality for adoption. For some reason in California, we carry that which is consideration of adoption of Resolution 21-2010, authorizing First Amendment to Franchise Agreement for Integrated Solid Waste Management Services between the CCSD and Waste Collections Incorporated, doing business as Mission Country Disposal Incorporated. Madam General Manager?
And after all of that reading, I would like to take an item out of order because Tom Martin, the representative from Mission Country, just left at about 2 minutes till 2 from San Luis Obispo.
Would you like to postpone action on this?
I don't want to postpone it. He's on his way. If we could just maybe go to 9C and just come back to 9B,
absolutely.
Please.
Absolutely. We'll wait for Mr. Martin
and
to
Kathy,
arrive.
And Kathy, if you'll just look out for Tom and let me know when he's here.
Pending Tom Martin's arrival, we'll move on to item 9C, which is to...
193.
Which is to consider adoption of Resolution 22-2010 approving agreement between the CCSD and Brad Clark. Madam General Manager.
All right, thank you. Fees were paid for Brad to come, for him to, when he made his request, it's an $1,100 administrative fee for board consideration, takes up staff time and everything for us to get this ready to go. And then the $1,200 legal fees for the agreement to be developed by district council. I attached to the staff report the former agreement that we had, and it was among the CCSD, Brad Clark, and the People's Self-Help, dated May 27, 2005. It was an agreement that achieved, you know, and I've listed here, the reduction in current and future demand for water and sewer. It provided for an opportunity for affordable housing. It provided for opportunities for permanent lot retirements and then open space. And I list in, on page 193 in bullets what exactly was conveyed, the actual property on Schoolhouse Lane. This is right next door to the Schoolhouse Lane apartments, right down by, close by the middle school here in Cambria. And Brad Clark did convey the property to People's Self that error. So it was one single family. We agreed that that one SFR that was on the Schoolhouse Lane property was going to be allowed to be transferred off within 5 years of the agreement. The CCSD also agreed to allow Clark's transfer of a partial commercial ADU, 0.72, from the Schoolhouse Lane property to another commercial property within that same time period of 5 years. And then Clark owned some other property in on Ardath and Green Street, and the CCSD agreed to authorize the conversion of those multifamily EDUs, three of them, to single family, and again transfer them off to residential property within 5 years. And then Clark had to retire one lot, or per the CCSD transfer policy, because there are alternatives and all of that. So he's done most of this work. He pays minimum billing for these because they're classified as existing commitments. And today he's asking for an additional 3 years for one of the single-family EDUs, and it's right now attached to the Ardath Green property, and a 0.72 commercial EDU. So he's done most of the majority of his work, and we staff felt that it was probably reasonable to do that given today's economic times. And we worked with district council to develop this agreement that's attached and begins on page 199. Got a couple of corrections that I want to make in that, too. Now, since this time in the development of the staff report, I've shared it with Brad Clark, and he had a commitment today, is why he's not present. He has asked that we, just related to the commercial EDU, the 0.72, you'll notice, too, in here, let me make this mention, because the Schoolhouse Lane property is now owned by People's Self-Help, it's just odd for staff to be tracking someone's EDU on property they don't own. So because in prior approved agreements, we've allowed like a resting place at the dog park property that the CCSD owns, we're suggesting that we track this commercial EDU because it's just odd to have it attached to some other private property that's owned by somebody else. So that's easier for us to do, and then it doesn't get forgotten that it's commercial EDU. If it goes and rests on one of Mr. Clark's residential, we just don't want it to get clouded that it might try to be absorbed up into a residential use. But Mr. Clark's further request since this staff report was prepared was that within the language in the agreement about the transfer of the commercial 0.72 commercial EDU, it does use similar language from the original 2005 agreement about it being strike the words with the sentence beginning Clark shall retire one lot to perfect such transfer in accordance with CCSD policy. If you'll just strike the words retire one lot two. So the sentence will read Clark shall perfect such transfer in accordance with CCSD policy. And the same in 2C. You'll see in the next to the last, in the very last sentence, but the next to the last line of that subparagraph, Clark shall, again, strike those words, perfect such transfer in accordance with CCSD policy. Particularly concerning the .72 commercially to you, he has an option of paying a fee instead of retiring a lot. That's what helps fund the voluntary lot merger program. So we want to provide for that opportunity that was not available at the time that the 2005 agreement was made. And then I was going to turn to district council. He developed some really nice language with regard to assisting Mr. Clark with his subsequent request for the mixed use, and I'll let him read that into the record.
This would replace the current Section 2C on page 200. And again, it deals with Clark's ability to utilize his .72 EDUs on mixed-use property in addition to using it on commercial property. The modified section would read, Clark's authorized to transfer the .72 commercial EDU from the CCSD property to either another commercial property or to a mixed-use property within 3 years from the date of this agreement or by May 27, 2013. Should Clark transfer the .72 commercial EDU to a mixed-use property, it shall be allocated exclusively to a commercial use on the mixed-use property. Clark shall perfect such transfer as required in accordance with CCSD policy.
Can you read the last part of that again?
Sure. Should Clark, again, this is an additional sentence after the 2013 mm-hmm. sentence that's currently in there. Should Clark transfer the .72 commercial EDU to a mixed-use property, it shall be allocated exclusively to a commercial use on the mixed-use property.
So what you're saying is that if it's a mixed-use residential and commercial, he's got to have both a residential and...
That's correct.
That's right. Correct. Or he can't, let's just say, for example, he has something, or he transfers it to somebody that just needs a .43 commercial, so he has some leftover. He can't take that leftover and let it go up there to the residential portion of that mixed-use property. This exclusively has to be used, even in a mixed-use scenario, for commercial.
Okay.
That concludes my report.
It is a private 501c3.
Okay. So it's got a what do you call it?
Nonprofit status.
Okay.
And
not that it matters here because that's already out of the picture in a way. Yeah. But just wanted to know the history.
People Self-Help Housing constructed the existing affordable housing project on Schoolhouse Lane, and they've done an excellent job managing it and so forth. It's a really fine organization. All right, any other questions of the general manager? We have one request to speak from a member of the audience, Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Sanders, Amanda Rice. I just had a question. Does the conversion of the three multifamily residential EDUs to single-family EDUs eliminate those three for use in multifamily residential? So in other words, you're eliminating some possibility of having EDUs available for multifamily residential development?
Yes. Yeah, it cancels out the multifamily designation. It just takes the same number of allocations and changes them from multifamily to single family.
So they would have to be, since they'll be single family, they'll have to be moved to something that's zoned single family, and or they'll have to go through zoning changes, right?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I think that we should add, though, that this whole agreement opens up a number of homes from people self-help to replace the multifamily.
It's an additional 40 units.
That's the purpose
units.
Of it. Yeah. That's right. This gets... a significant tranche of water entitlement into the hands of People Self-Help Housing. Okay. I have no more requests to speak from the audience. Any other board member comments or questions? Is there a motion to approve Resolution 22-2010?
I move we approve Resolution 22-2010, Resolution of the Board of Directors of Cambria Community Services District, approving agreement between CCSD and Brad Clark.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Tom Martin is still AWOL. Okay. We'll continue to hold item 9B until he arrives.
Thank you, Tammy. Mr. President, members of the board, there are two steps to this. The first is a concept that was developed to facilitate the future painting of the Fiscalini tank, which is not even part of the Stewart Street tank project at this point. And the second is mainly a ministerial step of cleaning up the contract with RBF to extend the term. I have a brief PowerPoint that ties into the discussion and the recommendation that Carlos is going to assist me with. We don't have the clicker today. But Carlos, if you could start that. Yes, please. Okay, thank you. Again, you have a resolution in front of you, 26-2010, that essentially authorizes a loan from the general fund to cover some out-of-scope work for the environmental clearance process on the Stewart Street tank project, as well as extending the term. Next slide, Carlos. The loan for this would be $17,000 from the general fund to the water fund. And then, again, we're extending the period of the RBF consulting agreement to the June 30th, 2012 date. Next slide, please. This just shows the current plan for the Stewart Street tank project. It's one tank, approximately 365,000 gallons in size. On the property where there's a tree nursery right now that the district owns, it's about 23 feet high and 52 feet in diameter. Next slide, please. This shows the Fiscalini tank corrosion. This is a separate site. It's up higher, serves a higher pressure zone than Stewart Street. And there's only one existing tank there. And we've been planning to paint it. The patches here on the roof area show where the corrosion has gone all the way through the plates. And essentially, we'd be painting over this, and rather than replacing the paint, replacing the plates, which we'd like to do. It's difficult to replace the plates on this tank because there's only one tank for that entire pressure zone. Next slide, please. So the concept that we developed was to look at moving that smaller tank up to the Fiscalini site from Stewart Street. And this illustration in the lower right corner shows the Fiscalini tank with the smaller of the two Stewart Street 1,000 gallons by changing this around and moving that smaller tank off of there. Next slide, please. I had some pros and cons just summarized here. The pros under the pluses, you can better repair the Fiscalini tank, obviously. There's more reliability with two tanks per site than just having the one, for example, at Fiscalini. You're further away from that neighbor that backs up to the property, so there was definitely some visual impacts there that were going to be very noticeable where we had that existing plan at. Again, we could increase capacity if we chose to by about 100,000 gallons. You can go up to roughly a 60-foot diameter tank with that revised layout, and it's much better for construction staging purposes where you can lay out equipment and tank parts and so forth. On the minuses, obviously we had an increase in consulting cost. It was $17,000 for the environmental clearance, which is the ISMND, stands for Initial Study Mitigated Neg Deck. We still have to determine what the cost would be for the additional design. That did not include design cost because there would be moving the tank onto a new foundation on the other site. There would be added construction costs from this, from the foundation work. If we built a larger tank at Stewart Street, there'd be additional costs, and I don't have those costs at this point. That would come out of the follow-on design work. Our intent would be to carry this through as an alternative and clearly identify it as an alternative in the environmental clearance work at this point, and that's it. And then we could carry it through the design. We'd have to go back to RBF and get more numbers from them on cost of additional design, and then even perhaps bid it as an alternative, take it all the way through the bid process. And then another negative is you're down to one tank on Stewart Street while you're moving this smaller tank around. I think we can work around that because it's would end up at a higher pressure zone, and it's easier to drop water from a higher pressure zone into a lower pressure zone if need be, if you had an emergency come up. Next slide, please. And that pretty much concludes my presentation at this point. I would be glad to go cover any questions or comments, concerns you might have at this point. So thank you.
One. Director Chaldicott.
Bob, just run down the actual capacities we're hoping to end up with.
Oh, gosh. We have
roughly.
Let's see. 365,000 gallons was the added capacity.
That will be a permanent installation.
That would be the plan, and we'd had piping to that site, so you'd have the two tanks, even though they're not the same size. At least you could take the fish cleaning tank out of service entirely, take some plates out, bolts out, and so forth, and not have quite the problem you'd have if you were working around as if it had just only one tank there, and you'd have to bring in maybe temporary tanker trucks to hold water, or other means that would add cost to the construction at some point.
Because that tank's, I guess, coming up for just roughly 20 years old, because it was just before I came on the board. So,
yeah, I believe it was built in the early 1990s.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Do we forecast it being longer lasting once you've worked on it or not?
You know, it's that's a good question. I think typically you assume a tank might go up to maybe 50 years if it's maintained properly and coated properly. It's much more difficult when you only have one tank at a site to remove it from service routinely to paint it. I don't think this fiscal tank was ever totally removed from service to be painted. The bolt together tanks, although they have certain advantages in having lower cost and maybe easier to construct in tight spaces, they do have disadvantages in the way they may corrode quicker, and I know operations personnel don't like them near as much as a welded steel tank.
Thank you.
Okay. Director McKinnon, you had a question?
Brief one. Do you have a wild blank guess of problem?
No, not at all. I thought it was
moving that one tank and so forth. Just the
my planning level order of accuracy estimate would be roughly $100,000 in added cost, and then you'd have some consulting costs on top of that. I would guess at least another $10,000 to $20,000 for design cost on top of that. That's very, very rough at this point.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question, Bob. Where are we in preparation of the mitigated negative declaration? How much work has been done?
It's in my court. I have about 90% completed documents right now, and I've just got to wrap them up with RBF.
And how much longer to complete them?
I would say another month, month and a half.
So in terms of kind of forecasting the schedule, we would make a decision today, then the MND would be finished. Then, understood.
I have a question.
Yeah, Director.
Adding what would it cost? About $100,000 to move that second tank up to Fiscalini, but we were going to have to do work at Fiscalini tank anyhow. Correct.
That's right, and I failed to mention too. I did put in a separate handout on the Fiscalini painting project. And there's more work at Fiscalini if we obtain funding that could go beyond painting. Yeah. That particular tank is sitting on a gravel pad. There's no real concrete foundation at the base of it. To take it a further step above and beyond painting and replacing steel plates, and this is all subject to funding and timing, you could put in more seismic restraints on that tank. It had to be analyzed by a structural engineer. But what's typically done, and I'm not saying this is be the exact case on Fiscalini, you put a concrete ring wall at the base of the tank, and then you weld vertical bolts on the side of the tank that get embedded into the concrete. And you also look at the piping in and out of the tank to make sure it has adequate flexibility, which may involve special fittings. So in an earthquake, when things are moving around, the pipe won't shear off. So that should all be looked at Fiscalini as well. And that's been a deferred
project for a while.
But there would be expenses of providing some kind of temporary tanking up there anyhow, if we didn't move this tank.
That's correct.
So
that's correct.
Even though you might say in the 100,000 guesstimate, are you minusing out what we would have had to spend anyhow, or we get some benefit back from not having to? In other words, once you get the smaller tank up there, you could theoretically just shut down fiscally any tank to do everything you needed to do, right?
I believe so. And I didn't necessarily minus out any potential savings from not having to have temporary construction.
I didn't think you had, but we would be facing extra money to provide some kind of temporary tanking if we didn't move that anyhow, right?
That's correct. Okay. My opinion, yes.
Okay. Any other questions of the district engineer?
I had one question. Do we actually own property there?
We do own the property at Fiscalini Tank, and I'm trying to keep this on that existing property, okay. So we have to get into a properties acquisition.
Whatever that whole thing involves. I do have a question, though, as to whether this is a capital improvement project, since the Fiscalini Tank painting was in the capital improvement plan. And help me again, which is the big stuff, capital improvement, and which is the maintenance capital stuff in the operating budget? Is this in the operating budget, or is this borrowing from the operating budget so that later it can be paid back as part of a capital improvement?
Madam General Manager?
Okay. If you're talking about the $17,000, that's coming from general fund reserves.
Right. Where will it go, where will it go
to? It'll go into the operating budget to pay RBF. And it will go into the line item of capital outlay.
So there is nothing here in the speculative costs, which might mount up like the mountain. There is nothing there that would be a part of a capital improvement plan budget when you get to it?
I don't understand the question.
I'm not sure we understand the question.
Let me rephrase my ineptly put question. Let's say that we've got $17,000 now, and we borrow it from general fund, and it goes back into water when water can buy it back at interest, I assume, although this could be Greece. Then we then have a whole other set of costs, which might be additional consulting, additional design, the mounting up of whatever legal fees with Coastal. Who knows what they will be? But there was that whole little negative side there that seemed to be perhaps some significant costs. Where will they come from?
But let me clarify. Those costs would be incurred in any event.
I don't care in any event. Okay. I'm asking where do they come from.
So I want to make sure we're on the same page.
Right. So whose section of the budget pays for them?
Well, it comes out of the water revenues.
Right.
So you're asking if it's a capital improvement project. It's a capital improvement project.
And so that's not one of those big capital plans that you've yet to budget for?
No.
Director D'Amico.
We keep saying things aren't exposed or planned. I have a November 9, 2009. I happened to go through my utilities committee and some of the meetings that we had. Mm-hmm. The Stewart Street tank at that time was budgeted at $971,000.
Right.
As a capital project.
Right.
Okay. And then the Rodeo Grounds pump station, which is
Act.
So that we could pay RBF, and whoever is, I'm sure Mr. Lavoisier is keeping track of all this money, so that whatever the line item for capital project for Stewart Street Tank, that will go, and that will be part of the $971,000 expenditures.
Correct. So now we think it's $971,000, according. I understand that's what the meeting
did.
It's now growing. I understand that, too, because it's now $17,000 plus. It could be some more.
No one said it growing. No one said it's growing.
But I don't like that.
Because we allocate money, it doesn't mean we're exceeding the $971,000 as of yet.
Director D'Amico, I'm assuming that in the 971, this particular $17,000 was not part of that budget that you're looking at today.
No,
I'm not saying it's a bad $17,000.
No.
I'm not asking that at all. What I'm saying is what happens often with these projects, given that the nation is what it is, costs increase. Income doesn't necessarily, but costs increase.
My question, and I'm feeling so boringly repetitive, my question is, when will the board of directors of CCSD do the big capital projects budget?
Well, thank you for getting to the essence of your question. We will be getting to it. This particular project, as Director D'Amico pointed out, was on the board's agenda. Now, it's undergone a little bit of a tweak here. There's a new concept that the district engineer has brought to us today. But back in November, we decided that we needed to push ahead on the environmental document for this project and the permitting because the lag time is so great that it will allow us to catch up with our capital improvements budget at some point. We're looking at a process that's going to take, my guess is, about 18 months to get through. So between now and then, we will have a thorough vetting of the capital improvements project budget.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Between now and then.
That's correct. Okay, any other? I have one more request to speak on this item from Jerry McKinnon.
Now, whether we can make up our mind whether this is just maintenance or capital improvement, let's go with the notion that we pay up front for what we do and not run up debts that we cannot repay. So I'm suggesting to you, let's be open and let's have transparency on this. Do you think that we should begin discussing new rates to establish the need for capital improvement programs?
When we get to the capital improvements budget, we will have a discussion about cost versus resources on hand versus any need to raise rates to pay for them.
And in the meantime, the $17,000 that we're going to borrow, we have no way of repaying because the rates that we pay now are not building up any kind of a reserve that I've been aware of.
It's internal borrowing. We're not going to a bank to borrow the money.
I understand that.
Okay.
One pocket from the other.
That is correct.
Robbing Peter to pay Paul. It's really what it's all about. But if we're borrowing, if we're using the word borrow, that means there's an intent to repay.
You can characterize it any way you'd like. The fact of the matter is we have, by declaration of an emergency back in 2001, a serious water storage deficiency. And the concept here is to not let this project lag, to move it forward and get it into a position where we have the necessary permits to build it. And during that long extended permitting process, we will have the hearings and so forth regarding our capital improvement budget, and we'll see if we can figure out a way to pay for it.
And I understand that. And I can look back at the history of the CCSD where our reserves diminished because of the enterprise funds having to borrow money from the reserves in order to accomplish things.
I absolutely take exception to that. The reason that the reserves diminished is because we paid cash for some very significant capital improvement projects. We paid cash for the Pine Knolls water tank project. We paid cash for the pipeline across the Fiscalini Ranch to boost the water pressure on Park Hill. We paid cash for other capital improvement projects. That is the principal reason that a motion to approve Resolution 26-2010.
I'll make a motion to approve Resolution 26-210, authorizing a loan from the general fund to the water fund to complete environmental review process for the Stewart Street tank and rodeo grounds replacement by RBF.
It's been moved to approve Resolution 26-10. Is there
second?
There's a second to the motion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
One, question. I haven't been up to Fiscalini for a while, but if that tank was to let go, does it inundate the rest of Lodge Hill, or does it go off safely into the ocean?
Boy, you got me on that, Peter. Okay. I think, as I recall, it probably flowed towards the ocean.
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
But there is a need to get it secured to the ground.
That's for sure, yeah. In fact, you know, as it was only done 20 years ago, exactly. It's really a surprise, you know, what was ignored in those days.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, I see that Mr. Martin is here, so we'll double back to item 9B, which is consideration of adoption of Resolution 21-2010 authorizing First Amendment to Franchise Agreement for Integrated Solid Waste Management Services between the CCSD and Waste Collections Incorporated, doing business as Mission Country Disposal Incorporated. Madam General Manager.
Okay, thanks. Tom is here. He is the general manager. I'm just going to go over a couple of brief details. The fiscal impact, what Mission Country is asking for is a 15-year extension to their agreement. The existing agreement, the franchise agreement between the CCSD and Mission Country was dated July 27, 2001, and it was a 10-year agreement, and it's set to expire on September 1st next year, 2011. And then there's provisions within that agreement for 3 one-year options that we... It would be mutual agreement between the parties. The agreement was subsequently assigned to Waste Connections, Inc., so, you know, they still are doing business as Mission Country. I just wanted to make sure the background was there for everybody. So they've asked for this 15-year extension, and this is based upon some costs and financing related to the Cold Canyon landfill expansion, and they're also going to be upgrading their truck fleet in these coming years to reduce the emissions through the use of CNG or compressed natural gas-powered garbage trucks. Tom states, and I'm sure he's here if you have any questions, that currently the Cold Canyon landfill has 2.5 years worth of capacity remaining, and this expansion project will provide 30 years of future. And that's the City of Aurora, Grande, Avila Beach, CSD, Cayuga Sanitary District, County of SLO, City of Grover Beach, Los Osos CSD, the City of Morro Bay, Napomo CSD, City of Pismo Beach, and then San Luis Obispo City and Oceano CSD are in the process of getting it before their governing bodies. District Council worked on prepared the First Amendment to the Franchise Agreement, which is attached, and it's a 15-year agreement from today's date, as I recall. It's not from the date that the original agreement expires. And then Tom Martin is here in the audience if there's any specific technical questions.
Any questions of the General Manager? Director D'Amico.
Well, first the good news, then maybe the bad news. Good news. This is a public-private partnership. We are the responsible to do this, and we've engaged a Correct. Private company to do it. That's the real definition of a public-private partnership. You still retain the responsibility, you retain the obligations, and you designate an operator, much like, I guess their latest is Mission Country, or there's a lot of names here. I agree on that. And what usually happens in an event of a public-private partnership, when there's to maintain their responsibility to do it, whether it be 5 years, 10 years, or longer, if there's capital outlays, they have to have some assurance that they'll have a cash flow, a revenue stream, so that when they undertake these benefits or these new improvements and take on a responsibility to accept our waste, that they have a revenue stream to talk to their finance people, et cetera. So that's the good news, and I endorse this kind of relationship. My concern is, first of all, one clarification. We're not changing anybody's rates with this agreement today, right?
No, we're not.
Okay, just want to make sure for myself and for the public. This is not changing anybody's rates and cost of to the CCSD.
No.
And I guess we're also not changing the revenue stream. Okay, good. $68,000 a year. The question I have for council is, while this is, like I said, I think it's normal practice, it's good industry practice for us to do this, but we are giving this extended agreement based on their representations that they're going to have a 30-year future disposal capacity, and they're converting their fleet to CNG trucks. And I think there should be somewhere in an agreement that we get a report, whether annually or biannually, or every 2 years. Maybe I don't know what his answer is going to be.
While Tom Martin is at the microphone, let's get any other issues out in the open here that we might want to have him cover. Director McKinnon, you've got your line.
I think the general manager mentioned the fact it's 15-year term, which is, seems excessive, but I understand the reason. How does it keep our costs down? With all of our neighbors signing up for the same agreement, it begins to put a tremendous amount of control on the part of Mission Disposal. And I'm concerned about, in the event of default, failure to perform, we don't have any backup. I mean, if there's a bunch of paragraphs that suggest for different reasons we could terminate a contract, but we have no backup. This is we are wedded to a mission. And your service has been great, so I'm not going to – it's been wonderful. But those are my two concerns. How does it keep our costs down when we sign up for 15 years and you have basically everybody in the Central Coast in the similar contracts? And what happens if you don't perform?
If we didn't sign up and we were the only user of some other service,
we could have a really as long as it's not a monopoly that has a complete control and we have no control.
Well, but no, we still have control because rates and things, they have, Tom, they've had to come back every time. And so we have some control over.
What do we say? Do we say yes?
Not
always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's let Tom Martin.
That's really a concern. I just want to hear
everything
one
at a time, working backwards. In addition to what Director Cliff talked about, there is also a performance bond in the contract, which if we fail to perform, you can exercise and then hire somebody. The garbage business is such that if I fail to perform, there'll be five guys here tomorrow willing to sign up.
Right.
So there really hasn't been a failure to perform in the garbage business in the last 25 years that I've heard of, because there is always somebody willing to step in and take care of that. What was the other one? How does it do your rates? You set the rates still, and that's what makes it not a monopoly. There's just I perform the service. If I need a rate increase, like 13 CNG trucks, and if the County of San Luis Obispo will ever get off their whatever it is and finish the EIR on Cold Canyon, we'll have 30 years worth of capacity. But they're about to do a recirc on the water portion and one other and the sound portion of that, and then we should be, you know, headed to the appeals process and the Board of Supervisors and that kind of thing. But I'm more than happy to do it annually if you want. It's not a problem.
Tom? Director Sheldon.
Yeah. What are you estimating the lifetime of the new trucks?
Well, we have trucks that are 20 years old that we currently run because we take good care of them. Yeah. And, you know, we have a fleet. Currently the fleet is 88, and we have 14 CNG trucks. The biggest hamper for us up here on the North Coast is that we need a fueling station somewhere in Morro Bay or Cayucas because we can't make it all the way up here, collect, and make it all the way home efficiently. In order to do that, we'd have to put so many tanks on the vehicle that it couldn't carry the capacity. So from that standpoint, the industry is changing. There will be a CNG station in Morro Bay, my guess is, within the next 3 or 4 years. And that will enable us to start doing some of that.
Director D'Amico.
Yeah. So you said your fleet's 88 trucks and you're 14, so a little less than, 20% would be 17, so about 18% of your trucks. And that's really what I'd like to see part of the reporting. We don't need to get to 88 in a year or something, but I want to see if we're signing up for 15 years to do something, that part of it is an environmental improvement. Let's monitor it. The Cold Canyon, I'm going to make a question. Do you need any endorsement from have you approached all of your customers to entreat the county to do a little more legwork on this and get it done?
Unfortunately, because of the planning department environmental review process, that we haven't gotten in front of anybody where we need any support yet.
Okay.
It's getting to that point, and when we actually know a date when it's going to go in front of somebody, I let everybody that we know come and support us. The IWMA is supportive of the Coal Canyon process. I mean, everybody's kind of in agreement that it's a good deal and we need to go forward because it provides the disposal for about 70% of the county, this side of the grade from Napomo to San Simeon. Mm-hmm. Having said that, there is still the environmental process, and the 14 neighbors around the landfill are fighting it like you and I would if I had a landfill next door to me. So it's just part of the process.
Whit Ridge, which is the parody on Hearst Castle, picked up the trash in Cambria. He had a franchise from the county to haul the trash out of Cambria. And the Board of Supervisors decided when his contract was up that they were going to open it up for competitive bidding and give it to somebody else maybe. And Art was a little upset, so he took the trash truck and he drove it up Green Valley Road and he hid it in a barn and he wouldn't tell anybody where the trash truck was located. So he brought the town to its knees, and he got his contract renewed. So never underestimate the power of the trash company.
And as, no. as a neighbor of Netwit Ridge, I would protest just like your neighbors. Yeah,
exactly. I think the essence is this is like a regulated public utility. As Mr. Martin pointed out, we set the rates, we monitor performance under the contract. There is a performance bond, and if there is a default under the contract, there's a cancellation provision, and I think there would be no end to the number of companies that would be willing to come in and pick up the trash. Well, so I'm not concerned about that.
One of the things I heard was that the contract 15 years from now or when we do this or 15 years from your normal runout date. Well,
we're proposing June 1st through May 31st, 2025.
That way, that's a better situation for the financing?
It's less complicated than trying to add on to what was existing.
Right.
With everybody, we just said, just give us 15 because that's what the bank is asking us.
Okay.
So we start the contract anew.
Right.
And
that's on page 191.
Okay. The request has been made and agreed to by Mr. Martin that there be and he offered up an annual report. Council, do you think there's a way to do this without amending the contract? In other words, could we append a condition of approval to our approval of the contract that would be sufficient?
There's a number of ways of doing it. You can add a provision right now if you want to. There's a provision in the agreement that allows us to essentially request any additional service on a 30-day notice period. So if they didn't perform, we could do it that way. Okay. You can always rely on Mr. Martin, whose word is usually pretty good
his,
over my 20
word
years
is good,
experience.
But, you know, God forbid, but, you know, 10 years from now, Mr. Martin might not be here. And
us to essentially add any new program, which would include a reporting requirement. And alternatively, again, I've drafted a couple of sentences that we could add as a new paragraph to the proposed amendment, if that's the desire of the board. Any way you want to handle it.
Board members, what's your pleasure? Do you want to amend the contract?
Easy enough to read it into the record if that's...
If he can read it into the record, we're done.
Good enough. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, I think it would replace existing 3. Let me just make sure of that.
Section 3?
190. This is a big report. So it's on 191. Now, this would be existing 3, and what's now 3 would become number 4. Franchisee shall annually provide franchisor with a comprehensive report on the status of the conversion to CNG trucks and the Cold Canyon landfill upgrade to a 30-year future disposal capacity.
Is that satisfactory to the board members?
Sure.
Mr. Martin? Okay. Is there a motion to approve Resolution 21-2010 with the amendment to the contract as read by the District Council?
So moved.
Oh, I'm sorry. We've got 2 requests to speak. I'm getting ahead of myself. Sorry, ladies. Request to speak from Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Sanders.
You bet.
I just had a couple of questions. The first one was, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not exactly sure whether the main body of the contract could be changed. But there's And on page 142, which is page 12 of the contract, you have 5.4 and 5.5 regarding recycling surfaces. Numerous times at the North Coast Advisory Council, we've had citizens come and speak to us about the trash cans that are on Main Street and request whether or not we could get some recycling cans in that down on Main Street area. And it seems to me that this might be an opportunity to request that be added for the public facilities collection to have the recycling added. I don't know if that's even possible. The other thing is on page 21 of the contract, which is 7.2, which is page 151 of the agenda packet. Is this still...
You know, we're talking about the cement ones.
Yeah.
Adding another task for those two guys to do. And that's not... I mean, Mission Country initially gave us those concrete cans. If we go, they're probably not going to be in the market to give us recycling containers. It would be another task that Ben and Carlos would have to do, and I would guarantee that they don't have the time to empty out recycling containers.
Maybe something for consideration in the future. I know that Ben has gone the extra mile and power washed sidewalks and power washed the trash containers that Mission supplied us with, and
Green Space had containers around us at one time. Did they give up on it?
Yeah, it's one of the issues that Tom Martin, Mission Country Disposal. It's one of the issues that communities everywhere face in terms of the sidewalk process. We've worked with some of the Rotary Clubs or the Kiwanis or whichever organization is the strongest in town, Lions. If you'd like to purchase some, we can collect it. If you'd like blue containers, we can give you blue containers. They're not, you know, pretty on the sidewalk, and I'm not sure what look, you know, architecturally you're going for. But we can certainly work with the North Coast Alliance and come up with something that will provide recycling. There are certain areas in the town where it's not needed, but, you know, by the liquor store and by the ice cream shop, and those kind of places are really where you need it. So it may be we start out very small with just four or five of them. But we can certainly...
Let's get a dialogue going.
Well,
I mean,
I think we've got to get clarification first.
Sure.
When Amanda brought this up, you were saying it's more work for Ben. No, this says collection of the waste. Is he collecting waste from our litter boxes or not?
Litter boxes?
Our sidewalk litter containers.
On the cement ones, the concrete ones.
He puts them in the containers behind
exactly
here,
right.
I believe, or over
we
the yard.
We physically pick them up. Our staff does and puts them in our... And we get it picked up for free. The CCSD doesn't pay for that. But
right.
The labor is my staff of those downtown trash cans.
Director D'Amico, the trash or litter is taken from the cans on Main Street by our staff to the big blue dumpsters, and then Mission picks it up.
Well,
it's interesting. It's not what this says. So.
Yeah. The other thing you need to be aware of is that sidewalk recycling containers, per se, like the city of San Luis Obispo has, become hugely contaminated because the general public can't.
We've got merchants along Main Street, especially in the East Village, who for them it's a two-edged sword. I mean, on the one hand, they like the fact that there are trash containers there. On the other hand, they detest the mess. It's an issue we should work on. I think there's probably a solution somewhere, and I appreciate the fact that Tom Martin has stepped up and offered to help us out in that regard. Okay, let's see.
The district council is going to answer that other question.
The other question, yeah.
First of all, Ms. Rice is correct. There is a provision in 7.2 that says franchisees should be solely responsible for collection of delinquent accounts. I think the genesis of that provision is monetary. I mean, again, that would really be the only purpose for it. And the incidental costs associated with collection on the tax roll, which are indeed incidental, will be passed on to the franchisee. They'll be paying for both administration and any county added costs associated with it.
It speaks to the monetary side of the issue, not the process side of the issue.
I mean, I assume that's how we're going to construe it. If the board feels it's necessary to strike that provision or to modify it, and I wouldn't suggest that you do because It really stands for the proposition that any cost associated with it will be the responsibility of the franchisee. I'd leave it in there. I don't find them internally inconsistent. You could stretch it and say they were, but I don't think it's necessary. It's a good catch. I appreciate
under that. Under the theory that if it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know, it's probably best left as it is. Okay, I have an additional request to speak on this item from Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I want to say that every Wednesday morning is one of the best days of my life because Mission Country is one of the best companies I've ever encountered, whether I lived in New York City, in Boston, or elsewhere. The guys are professional, not to the extreme, but close. They are kind, gracious. I find Mission Country excellent. And so extending this to 15 years makes great sense to me. I want to ask one quick question about the revision you just did on page one. On page 190, you moved that to a new 3 in terms of the 30-year of future disposal capacity, but you didn't finish that where it says on page 130, Cool Canyon Landfill, et cetera, will achieve future disposal capacity and enhanced and improved recycling facilities. I hope that in your annual report, you're missing. I've adopted San Simeon State Beach. I've adopted Shamel Park Beach. I've adopted various stretches of Main Street silently, but now I announce it. I can tell you about this. This is number 6.
Styrofoam.
You got it. And I will not go into the details of what this does to the wildlife, right, to the human life, most of it wild. I urge you to do what you can as a community and Mission Country Disposal as a company to up the ability of Coal Canyon to recycle number 6. It's not only this, but if we can't get that through very quickly in our activity, minimize your crap. Minimize garbage. We wouldn't need this expansion if we didn't have a consumer society that believed whether 20 pounds of dead beef in the form of hamburger or, pardon my pointedness, 18 units of water consumption instead of 12 is the norm. We are overly consumptive in the United States. They used to call us names in other countries. And now they just silently wish things about us. So friends, consume less, recycle more, use less, and see if you can wear it out before you toss it out, to quote a friend of mine.
Good advice. In terms of the recycling facilities at the Cold Canyon landfill, I'm very confident that Mr. Martin will include that in his report.
Tom Martin, Mission Country. I don't have any problem with adding the language that she requested. We used to recycle styrofoam about 10 years ago, 11 years ago. It got to the point where it was costing $300 a ton to get rid of it. And we could dispose of it for $30 a ton. And we could spend a whole year's worth of effort, and we did a total of 26 tons in styrofoam. If I spent 2 days worth of effort going after the construction and demolition industry, I could recycle 30 or 40 tons of concrete in a drop of a hat. And so it was decided, along with consultation with the city of San Luis Obispo and most of the major cities that we dealt with, that it was not worth the money to continue to try and recycle styrofoam because it would require a rate increase to do it. And given that we are currently at 63
containers, and I'm just wondering, is there any recycling at all for those?
Now, you're talking about the six packs you get at the store when you buy flowers?
Those and then up to the gallons and so on.
Oh, no, they can go in the blue bin.
They can.
Yeah. I believe they have a number on the back side of them. They shake the dirt off of them and get all the dirt. But if it's a plastic product, put it in the blue bin. If you have the play school toys that your grandkids get or your kids get, that can go in there now. Almost anything that's made out of plastic can go. Somebody will take it for something because they can squeeze something back out of it.
Good. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Counsel, can you append to your contract amendment some language regarding recycling?
Report on recycling? I can read it to you now, or
Please do.
Okay. I'll read it from the beginning so that it makes sense. A franchisee shall annually provide franchisor with a comprehensive report on the status of the conversion to CNG trucks, comma, the Cold Canyon landfill upgrade to a 30-year future disposal capacity, and enhanced and improved recycling facilities.
Okay. Board members, with that as a contract amendment, which has been agreed to by the applicant, is there a motion to adopt Resolution 21-2010?
I will move for adopting Resolution 21-2010.
Second.
With the amendment that has been read by District Council. All right. It's been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 21-2010 as amended. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Martin.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I apologize for my tardiness.
No, it's okay. No problem. All right, that takes us down to the last item on the regular business agenda for today, item 9E, which is to receive draft fiscal year 2010/2011 CCSD operating budget. Madam General Manager?
Okay, thank you. I'm going to first go through just a quick PowerPoint that points to the key assumptions and highlights before we talk about the individual departments and pages and just point out some of these things. And Carlos has agreed to assist me today because somehow our little handheld slide changer sprouted little feet and walked away, so we have to relocate it. Thanks, Carlos. Okay, so the next slide, we talk about key assumptions and highlights for the they're not down by much, but because of the year we had with rain, and to a tiny extent, we can see, particularly in the beginning of the fiscal year, some usage down in the hotel-motel category, just right at the beginning. It seems to have picked back up, but with the rain, fewer people obviously use their irrigation systems. We assumed there would be no water or wastewater rate increases. We assumed a 2% decrease in the ad valorem property taxes. This is exactly what we did last year. Al's meeting with the county folks said, you know, 1.5, and so we'd rather be conservative and just go ahead and go to the 2%. It is close to $40,000. We assumed a 1.9% CPI increase in the fire suppression assessment benefit, and that's related to what you approved today for the advanced life support. There's about a $7,000 uptick in cost. This 1.9 provides about a $7,000 increase in their revenues to cover that, so there's a bit of a nexus. The transfer of the EDU fees, those are just so highly variable that we don't project them. And just for a further explanation, this is like the Granville Homes fees. You know, we show those, they're reflected in revenues, but I don't know that those are going to be coming down the pike. So it's just not fair. So you'll see that there's a big zero when you look at the resource conservation page. So we made that assumption. We assume decreased facility rents here at Vets Hall because the Vineyard Church moved out. They have their own place. Core Care is no longer using the facility. So while we put them down, I am aware that there are some things working with some other users who want to bring in some exercise class that fit within the recreational category of a Vets Hall user. But I do believe that it's time to be looking at a minimum use fee for the Vets Hall. We assumed a decrease in the fire hazard fuel reduction weed abatement revenues because, quite frankly, our CCSD contractor is clearing fewer lots. The property owners are clearing their lots, so we don't get as many revenues, and then you'll see a correlating decrease in the cost for the lot clearing. When I mentioned earlier about the interest income, Al's projecting it at a 0.75 or 0.75% as an average interest rate on the reserves. The fire mutual aid reimbursements, here's another one that's just highly variable, and we just didn't project it. We don't know that we're going to be able to send crews out, and it's just difficult to look at prior years and think, oh, well, it looks like if you average it, you can agreement. Excuse me. This includes the 4% pay increase for SEIU Local 620. As I stated, they rejected contract concessions. This includes the 4.1 pay increase for the IFF Local 4635 firefighter employees and the management and confidential employees. And you'll see later on that in the next slide that we do balance out the fact that there's that 2% give back or payback of our employee share, the portion of our employee share. In the next slide, we've reinstated the HRA benefit. It was on the consent calendar today. That takes effect July 1st. There will be no expected health care premium abatement. Last year it was known as the PPO holiday. We're now on the HMO, but we don't see that that's going to occur. That was a very nice cost saving for the CCSD last year. There is budgeted within this budget unemployment benefits for the two admin employees that are being laid off. There's a reduction of retirement costs due to the 2% contribution of employee share by the management confidential employees and the IFF Local 4635. We need to restore our technology management services. We have had some serious problems with our system, network system. So we need to have an outside consultant or a professional services firm taking care of that. We do not have that expertise on staff. This budget includes a full year of VanSkoyt professional services for advocacy in D.C., and it is within the general fund or the admin division. We bumped up fuel costs. We expect that they may go up. It's not included today, but for the next budget, we will have to increase our bad debt expense. Because of the layoff of two employees, that's going to have to be an impact. We decreased the professional services because the San Luis Obispo Land Conservancy contract, they'll be presenting it next month to you. The lot assessment, the vacant lot assessment, is completed once they make their presentation next month. And then this reflects a full year of there being no professional services based on Connie Davidson's resignation or her termination. This includes external professional services, and that's for the fire hazard fuel reduction program and water and wastewater standby noticing because of the reduced staff and admin. Here's the decreased fuel hazard contract because there is noticeably a declining lots that are cleared by the CCSD. This includes the decreased office rent. Now, let's talk about the layoffs and the reasons why there's going to be layoffs, and then we'll talk about these impacts. With the reductions of the water and sewer sales, the reduction in the property taxes, and other revenue sources, we had some retrofit and lieu fees that were down, the vets hall fees down, and then we had those increased costs for retirement and the pay raises, the reinstatement of the HRA, the unemployment benefits, and there being no contract concessions from SEIU Local 620. And then a couple of operating costs driving up, which is the IT services, and then the full year of VanSkoyt, there was no way to balance the budget. And that's the direction I've been provided. And so it became necessary to look how those costs were spread out. And I came to the conclusion that it would be best to lay off the two people in admin so that the core services and the operations would continue to be able to be maintained. There are lots of impacts of two people being gone besides the humanistic standpoint. We will have to work on reorganizing the admin and reallocate duties, and there's already thought processes going into that. Because there will be only two people in the office, the front office, we have other staff that can provide backup. We will request that the office be closed on Fridays. Our employees have 980 work schedules. Everyone will migrate to one Friday off. So two Fridays a month, there'll be nobody in the office. The other two Fridays, we're going to be playing catch up. We have an automated telephone response system, and it works out beautifully thanks to a couple of employees. They were able to take our answering service, and so before and after hours, when a call comes in and you get a live voice on the phone, they type it up and it gets emailed to everybody in admin or whoever might be impacted. So we know when someone's called us and we have that ability to call that person back. There could be time that there's only one person in the admin office and we're going to have to put all the calls on that service, okay? It may go to that just because we're helping somebody at the counter and we're not going to stop what we're doing to do that. There will be reduced admin support to managers and supervisors and coworkers, and I will communicate that clearly, that they will be responsible for some things that currently these two employees are doing. Corey Ryan will be relocated to admin. We will evaluate the elimination of the CIS, which is the customer information system. It's really nice information to have. It helps us do the water, wastewater availability, fire hazard, fuel reduction, but I'm just not so certain. I'm positive we're not going to be able to keep it up. And I don't know that it meets and looks at the core values of the services of water and sewer and why we would continue to keep it. There will be increased processing time for waitlist transfers and assignments and lot mergers. Right now, Corey and Monique have that down to just a few days. And believe me, I know the realtors are not going to like this because they set closing dates and they hound us, okay? And I say that in a nice way because I really enjoy working with the realtors. But we do ask and gets managed by a professional. The admin support and fire will be reduced to part-time, and we're looking at the potential for a retired annuitant, so it's a very low cost to the CCSD. But again, when somebody calls the Cambria or the CCSD Fire Department, half the time you're going to go to the voicemail and somebody will call them back. It will increase some response times for return calls and emails. It's always been an internal policy of mine that we get back to somebody within a day's time or 24 hours. I see that moving toward 48 and 72. The vets hall contract, the user contracts, people are used to coming in there and getting them like in a day's time. We're going to have some increased lead time for that. We'll be training the water staff so when they're out in the field, they're not radioing us going, hey, what's the balance on this account? What's this? What's that? They have a tough book. It will require them to have that system placed on it, and we're going to have to train them so that they can look it up. Okay? External services contract for fire hazard fuel reduction program. I talked about that earlier just for that noticing. Same with the getting an external services contract for water, wastewater availability. There are firms who do that, and they would be the same type firm that would do a Prop 218. So if that ever comes into effect, that will be done with an external services contract. We'd like to look at the evaluate the minimum vets hall user fees for nonprofits. And then we have a nice little laundry list of admin projects for years that have gone unattended to, and it has definitely not been from staff not being productive or organized. Records retention, electronic file repository, and then the CCSD code update that hasn't been looked at since we developed it. And finally, I got a few impacts to the board. We would ask that you evaluate your board committees. Your committees, as they're designed now, are standing committees, and administratively, that just creates a lot of work for us for noticing and, okay, if somebody wants minutes or setup and whatever all that's doing, we'd really appreciate that you look at that. It's no offense. It's just something that's going to have an impact. Action-only board minutes. This, you know, talking about what people say when they speak up to the podium, with all due respect, we have a DVD or, you know, you can go out to the AGP website and listen to public comment. It just really needs to list someone's name and doesn't need to go into the discussion of what someone said. So we would like to really get those minutes down to a page or two. I'm talking next Tuesday, and I've already approached the subject with the PROS Commission Chair about going to quarterly meetings rather than monthly. That is just so much work for us. And then there will be some impacts to staff outreach as a result of these additional duties. Just be very difficult to think about spending all the money on paper and running two or three different versions of the budget. So that's an added item I thought about when I saw his laptop today.
Director Clift is already paperless.
I appreciate that.
And I know this is near and dear to Director McKinnon's heart.
I sincerely appreciate it.
So when do we get our new laptops?
You know what? I won't say new laptops because I got to tell you, with the audit that one of the companies did for our IT services, we found out that there just might be some laptops that we use but that could be surplused out for this. So I just want to say I think it can be worked out. Okay, we've got some issues with the IT here at Vets Hall, but that services contract could work that out. Now, if there's any questions, I can certainly point to any of the slides, and these bullet points all have numbers in the budget that I can point to. Al is here for any technical detail, and I'm open at this point.
Question, board members.
Yes.
Director D'Amico.
Yes,
please.
Just to clarify, because the discussion regarding the two layoff persons, is that what you're saying is already factored into what we have before us?
It is factored into what you have before you.
Great, because, and as you say, the human side of it's disappointing for for them definitely and their families. But the fact is, is that even with the open positions in the utilities, with the multitasking that everyone has been doing, and with the conditions that we were able to, you were able to effect with the fire department, with the admin department, you will see, and that was my key issue, is that we are now, you know, when you look back at the at salaries and wages, we're hitting a plateau again, and that's the only reason we're at the plateau is because of the two people. If we had left them in, we would have been growing back again.
Absolutely.
And would have been back to where we were in 2008-09.
That's right.
And again, it's you know, everybody's living with the issue because you've got a certain segment that grows without us making any decision, which is benefits, COLA, cost of gasoline, cost of electricity going up and the like. We're forced to see that going up. And the only control we have, as you've taken that control and grappled with it, is it's left to staff attrition.
Staff attrition.
And much like the 2 years. Reorganization that...
I would really commend the staff and the general manager. I think we're ahead of the power curve. I mean, for 2 years now, we've had attrition and staff, and then services have really... been very reasonable. Here we're seeing a hit in services, and I think the public has to recognize we're getting down to bones.
Yes.
So it can't keep doing that process. That did a great job.
Yeah. I would echo that. Yeah. Very good job.
I did want to add one thing. Director Cliff had asked me during his meeting, and I'm sorry that I failed to do it during my presentation. I didn't have this information when I was doing my PowerPoint last night at home. He asked me about staffing, and so I went back the 3 year. Well, this projected year, this current year. So I went back to 2008, 2009. Okay, because it was readily available, and budgeted positions, full time equivalents. Okay, so this does not include the reservists. In 2008, 2009, there were 31.5 positions. 2009, 2010, what we're in now, 29.5, and projected will be 27.
Does that include the consultants? See, on 2009,
no.
So that was another one.
No,
that's
just FTEs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
These are benefited employees full time. Mm-hmm.
And when you say reservists, you mean fire department?
Firefighter reservists are not included in those numbers.
Yes, Director Clift.
Yeah, and I wanted to say, looking over this, it's a pretty tight budget, and I think you've done a great job on that. And it's important. I thought it was important to point out that. The original concept that Director D'Amico came out with at the very start of all of this was to begin to look at the what we do rather than just positions. And I think you've done a good job of redesigning and making things work and coming out with a situation where we, even though our budget of salaries and things is pretty near to what it was 3 years ago, it would have been astronomical and problematic for the ratepayer and everybody else if it hadn't have done that. I did bring my laptop today just to because of 218 pages, which, gentlemen, I'll tell you, is small compared to the special district risk management one. One I get from them is over 300 pages, and it is always electronic. There's no...
Yeah. But, you know, she's after
You know, and I don't want to add to your burden, but I almost wonder how much it really does, each one of those things does cost us in time and everything else that that we can do it electronically. And then if you want to look at the past contract for Mission Country, you can look at it, but we don't have to have it printed out for everybody.
That's
so.
Right.
So those kinds of savings and things I think we should continue to look for. And hopefully there are some procedures I know with the SDRMA. At the same time as something is on your screen, it's up on the board at the same time. So right. The public doesn't even need to have a lot of extra paperwork type of things. So it can be seen rather than pictures of us, they're pictures of what's important.
Excellent. All very good points. We can be drug kicking and screaming into the 21st century, right?
Just clarify that we will presumably have a hard copy of agendas for people that arrive, and that would be basically it.
We have a notebook back there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, maybe. We haven't evaluated. I got to tell you, I haven't gotten through that detail, but as I'm sitting here watching him, that has totally been one that I would really like to get to, where we're all looking at it electronically rather than by paper. So
I think your president, board president, and vice president will be working with the staff to come up with some alternatives here that make sense so that we can begin to implement this paperless concept to the maximum degree possible.
And as I said, I have a laptop from SDRMA that I keep that stuff on, and it has a really cool method of doing it and let you look at it and see if it's workable. And I'm sure SDRMA would probably send you down the program if at no cost to you.
Director Clift, wait till you get your LAFCO agenda and all its publications. You'll need two laptops.
Those come from the county on
CD.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's important that we passed over it, but I spoke to the general manager about the IT consultant. There's so much going on out there that we're just not aware of. And I agree with you. This is too much paper, really, just too much.
Of course, it is a lot of paper, and we're killing a lot of trees here. And we will come back with a more streamlined way of doing things so that we can cut down on the burden on the staff of keeping up with all of that. So perhaps by the next meeting we'll have a proposal for the board to consider. Let me say, too, about this budget, particularly as it relates to the reduced number of staff, keep in mind that not only are we working with less staff, but there have been some very, very significant time-consuming projects that the staff has dealt with over the past 18 months, not the least of which involves meetings with the Corps of Engineers, meetings with consultants working on the desalination project, the district engineer working with RBF on the Stewart Street Fiscalini tank project, the rodeo grounds pump station. I mean, there's a lot going on. And I think it's just remarkable what the staff has been able to do with less. We're doing more with less. So as an operating concept, not bad. I have one request to speak from the audience, Jerry McKinnon.
Jerry McKinnon again. The paperwork. Please don't hide information from the public. Make it accessible some way or another. If we have to go to the computer, there are a lot of people who are not that computer literate that still have an interest in what you as a board do.
Absolutely.
And say. So don't leave us out of the loop, please. Vets Hall Rentals. Do everything we can to make this an asset to the community rather than a liability by limiting the kinds of organizations or events that can use the hall means that we're losing that revenue that would be generated by that particular activity. If it's a nonprofit, the suggestion has been made that maybe we ought to modify the rates that we give to a nonprofit. I would suggest considering a rate to a nonprofit to be the fees for cleanup. Now, if a nonprofit, how much is going to be expent on the maintenance of this building? We have two employees 7 days a week, 8 hours a day, taking care of this building, mowing all of the lawns that are out there in the parks and all that kind of stuff, taking care of the public restrooms. and it's all on one page in the budget. Well, we really don't know what's going on. And if we had some accountability as to really what's going to take care of that and what's taking care of this, I think those two employees are overworked. Personally, that's a lot of work to do. 7 days a week, 8 hours a day, taking care of all of the trails in town, the east-west ranch, the public restrooms, as well as this building. So I'd like to have you consider really a budget page just for this building. Now, you wouldn't have to go back in the history of the CCSD very many years to find a model, to find a budget page of the Vets Hall. And if that were just adopted and saying that we're going to use the same formula as that, then at least it's a beginning, and either we're falling short or we're going overhead, one of the two. But I would hope you would give that serious consideration. Thank you very much.
Jerry?
Thank you.
Jerry, could I just, Jerry? When the Vets Hall had its own page, there really wasn't anything else to do.
Because
there was just the two restrooms which came in the 90s, and everything else came after it, you know.
You have the Vets Hall, the two restrooms, and the district office.
Right.
The district office is cleaned by the same employees who mow the lawns and do all of the other work. So their responsibilities are tremendous. And if you want the clean office, they got to be there and clean it up. And that takes time.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate your comment.
Just one clarification. We have 1.5 people that maintain all of that work.
Right.
One employee in that department is only part-time. Carlos is full-time, but that's it.
Understood.
I was going to say.
Yes, Director Chaldicott.
One thing the impact and the general manager has talked about is the response time from constituents. So we no doubt will hear back that, you know, they're not going to respond. Because we're all used to saying, what's wrong with my water bill? The answer is right there.
So we expect to see it back.
Okay. And then we'll work together on some of these other things with regard to the impacts and some reorganization. So that'll be brought back next month for consideration with this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So that dispenses with the regular business calendar and takes us to the second public comment period. I have no request to speak during the second public comment period. Is there anybody in the audience who would like to address the board on any item that's not on the agenda? Hearing none, we are adjourned.